through space toward a green planet. Turner. In a pastel painting, a harsh winter sun glares through bare-limbed birch trees. A title in white capital letters reads, Overture. In the painting, patchy, impressionistic streaks of pink, blue, and yellow skid across the canvas. Across the top, a narrow swath of blue suggests a sky. Light radiates from the round, blazing sun. The beams end in spiky white shards. Ghostly outlines of leafless birch trees cluster in a sparse forest, their white bark smudged with black patches. Painting and the word overture fade to black. Now a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. The birch forest painting dissolves into a series of paintings of the scene in various seasons. Titles appear. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents a Carlo Ponti production. David Lean's film of Dr. Zhivago, from the novel by Boris Pasternak. This film has been described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Leslie Wu Foley. Read by Peter Haydu. For more about DVS, call 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website at dvs.wgbh.org. Starring Geraldine Chaplin as Tonya, Julie Christie as Lara, Tom Courtney as Pasha, Alec Guinness as Yevgrav Zhivago, Shoban McKenna as Anna, Ralph Richardson as Alexander Gromyko, Omar Sharif as Yuri Zhivago, Rod Steiger as Komorowski, and Rita Tushingham as The Girl. With Adrian Corey, Bernard Kay, Jeffrey Keane, Klaus Kinski, Jeffrey Rockland, Gerard Chishi, and Noah Wilman. Production Supervisor, John Palmer. Production Managers, Augustin Pastor and Douglas Twitty. Camera Operator, Ernest Day. Assistant Directors, Roy Stevens and Pedro Vidal. Continuity, Barbara Cole. Sound Recording, Paddy Cunningham. Re-recording, MGM Sound Department. Art Director, Terence Marsh. Set Decorator, Dario Simoni. Makeup by Mario Van Riel. Hairstylist, Gracia De Rossi and Anna Cristofani. Special Effects, Edie Fowley. Costume Designer, Phyllis Dalton. Film Editor, Norman Savage. Second Unit Director, Roy Rosati. Sound Editor, Winston Ryder. Second Unit Photography, Manuel Berenger, ASC. Executive Producer, Arvid Griffin. Copyright 1965 by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Incorporated. Original music composed and conducted by Maurice Jarre. Production designer John Box. Director of photography Freddie Young, BSc. Filmed in Panavision. Screenplay by Robert Bolt. Produced by Carlo Ponti. Directed by David Lean. Fade to black. Nighttime, at an enormous dam. Hands behind his back, a sharp-featured 40-ish man wearing a military uniform stands at the window of a sparse office. Outside, a group of women laborers emerges from the dam. Wearing drab clothing and scarves over their hair, they cross a dark, shadowy bridge of concrete, passing the next shift of workers walking in the opposite direction. Light from the doorway illuminates a large red star over the dam's high arched entrance. Inside the office, the uniformed man addresses an engineer hunched at a desk.
What are they like, these girls?
They're very good. Bit wild. Spend their money quickly. Work hard.
Are they literate?
Some of them. In and out of reformatories from the day they were picked up.
Jumps like this. It's degrading.
You shouldn't use human beings to move Earth.
No.
And it's not efficient. If they were to give me two more excavators, I'd be a year ahead of the plan by now.
You're an impatient generation.
Weren't you?
Yes, we were. Very. Oh, don't be too impatient, Comrade Engineer. We've come very far, very fast.
Yes, I know that, Comrade General.
Yes, but do you know what it cost? There were children in those days who lived off human flesh. Did you know that?
The young, dark-haired engineer joins the general at the window. Outside, hundreds of workers file across the bridge in both directions.
What is your interest in this girl, Comrade General?
She may be my brother's child.
Yuri Andreevich?
Yes. My half-brother, I should say.
He opens a book.
If she is, she's also Lara's child.
The Lara?
The Lara, yes. This is a new edition of the Lara poems.
Yes, I know. We admire your brother very much.
Yes, everybody seems to. Now?
Well, we couldn't admire him when we weren't allowed to read him.
No.
Outside, women stare curiously out at the window as they pass a gleaming black car guarded by a police motorcade. A young woman arrives at the office door, her eyes wide with apprehension.
Come in.
She hesitates and backs away. The engineer opens the door.
I sent for you, Dominic. You're not in any trouble.
The young woman steps hesitantly into the office. She stares at the general, her eyes wide in her long, plain face. Straight blonde hair strays from beneath her headscarf.
I'm General Yevgrav Andreevich Zhivago. I'm looking for someone. Do you understand?
She continues to stare without moving.
The person I'm looking for would be my niece.
Zhivago pulls out a chair at the wooden table.
You sit down.
She hesitates, then sits.
Your name is...
Tonya Komarova, Comrade General.
They found you in Mongolia, didn't they?
Yes, Comrade General.
What were you doing there?
I was lost, Comrade General.
How did you come to be lost?
I've forgotten.
Was Komarovsky your father's name?
I suppose so, Comrade General.
You suppose so?
It's a common name.
Do you remember your father?
No.
Do you remember your mother?
Yes. I remember my mother.
What was her name?
Mummy.
What was she like? I mean, what did she look like?
Big.
Big?
I was little. She looked big.
Zhivago slides into the chair next to Tonya and holds up the book.
Can you read?
Yes. Lara, a cycle of poems by Y.A. Zhivago.
Not me. My half-brother.
He opens the book to a photograph.
The person I'm looking for would be this man's daughter.
Tonya's eyes scan a portrait of a dark-haired, mustached man.
This would be her mother.
She stares at the woman with gleaming blonde hair.
Lara. Did anybody ever call your mother Lara?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Tonya smiles at the picture.
She's nice.
Her smile fades.
I'm not your niece, Comrade General.
Well, I'm nobody's idea of an uncle. But if this man were my father, I should want to know. Did your mother ever tell you your father was a poet?
Comrade General, my father wasn't a poet.
What was your father?
Not a poet.
Zhivago stands and paces across the room.
Did you like your father?
I've forgotten.
But you liked your mother.
Yes, of course.
Does the name Strelnikov mean anything to you, Strelnikov?
Tonya shakes her head.
Varikino? That's a place, not a person. Gromyko?
Gromyko.
Yes.
Tonya shakes her head again.
You see, he lost his mother at about the same age you were when your mother lost you. And in the same part of the world.
Now a vast snow-covered mountain range rises starkly up to a lead-gray sky. In the distance, a group of 24 people dressed in black moves across a barren plain, a tiny, slow-moving speck against the desolate landscape. Now at the funeral procession, a young boy about 8 years old walks behind the casket clutching a bouquet of small white wildflowers. His somber face is pale against his black fur hat and black coat. A Russian cross adorns the side of the casket, with two horizontal lines near the top and a third angled line below. Three priests head the procession, wearing long black robes and embroidered mantles. Behind them, six pallbearers wearing fur hats and heavy coats carry the casket on their shoulders. In it, a woman lies, wrapped in a white lace veil. The boy fixes his gaze on a newly dug grave. One priest with a long gray beard gently guides him next to it. The pallbearers lay down their burden. A young woman of about 30, her face waxy and pale. The mourners bow their heads and make the sign of the cross.
Now is life's artful triumph of vanity is destroyed, for the spirit has vanished from its tabernacle. Its clay groweth lack, the vessel is shattered, voiceless, motionless, dead. Committing which...
The boy stares curiously as a dead leaf tumbles onto his mother's face. He gazes up at the trees. A handful of dry leaves cling to their branches, rustling in the wind. The pallbearers lower the purple velvet-covered lid of the coffin. The little boy watches as two men nail the coffin shut. They wrap long white slings under each end of the coffin and slowly lower it into the ground. The boy stares as the men shovel dirt into the 6-foot-deep hole. The little boy imagines his mother lying motionless in the dark satin-lined coffin. His eyes wander skyward, where dead leaves swirl weightlessly in the wind. The boy wrenches his attention back to the gravesite. Most of the mourners are gone, except for a kind-faced couple in their 30s, their little girl, and the bearded priest. Yori steps forward and lays the bouquet of wildflowers at the head of his mother's grave. The woman takes his hand in hers. Together, the family leads Yori out of the cemetery. Later, in a stark, bare-walled cottage lit only by candles, Yori sits in bed.
You and your husband will dine with us, Madame Gurmiko.
Thank you, Father.
She kneels by Yuri's bed.
Will you lie down then, Yuri? Your mummy and I were great, great friends, you know. So now we are going to look after you.
Thank you.
Alexander Gurmiko enters, holding an ornate balalaika.
That's Mother's.
It's yours now.
Yes, Yuri, Mummy left it to you.
In her will.
Do you know what a will is, old chap?
Money.
No, Yuri, just this. Your daddy has all. Can you play it?
He shakes his head.
Thought all the people in this part of the world could play the balalaika.
You don't live here, do you?
No, Yuri, we live in Moscow. That's a long way from here, but you like Moscow. Won't he?
In a bit. Takes time to get used to things, doesn't it?
Mother could play it.
Well, your mother was an artist, Yuri. She could make this common little instrument sound like two guitars. Your mother had a gift.
Perhaps Yuri's got a gift. Would you like lessons?
I can't play it.
The Gromykas share a troubled look, then remove the guitar-like instrument.
Say goodnight to Yuri, Tanya.
The little girl kisses Yuri's cheek.
He's your brother now.
Good night, old chap.
Good night.
Lying in the darkness, Yuri stares with wide, fearful eyes at the frost-covered window where a gnarled branch taps against the glass. His gaze drifts to the balalaika, resting in a corner. The red, triangular body of the instrument gleams with inlaid silver and mother-of-pearl, intricately designed into flowers and birds. Yuri's reverie ends as he looks back toward the window. Outside, a fierce gale whips icy pellets of snow into the air. Funeral wreaths skid across the snowy cemetery ground like tumbleweeds. Yuri climbs out of bed and peers through the frosted window. Now a 20-ish Yuri squints into a microscope.
The Romikos didn't know what to make of him. He made his reputation as a poet while he was studying to be a doctor. He said that poetry was no more a vocation than good health. What he needed was a job.
Pretty? Hey.
The professor peers at the wriggling organisms.
It's no right to be pretty. What'll you do next year, Zhivago?
I thought of doing general practice.
Think about doing pure research. It's exciting, important, can be beautiful.
General practice.
Life. He wants to see life. Well, you'll find that pretty creatures do ugly things to people.
He throws away the slide. Later, wearing a cap and a long woolen coat, Yuri sprints across a snow-covered square. A trolley car rumbles away as he reaches the tracks. Yuri hesitates, then grins and chases after it. On the trolley, a young woman glances out the window, her blonde bangs peeking out from under her black woolen tam. A thick black scarf covers the lower half of her face. Yuri hops onto the moving train and takes a seat behind her. Outside the window, a child runs along the sidewalk. Yuri and the young woman crane their necks to watch her, their movements mirroring each other. As the trolley slows to a stop, the young blonde woman stands up. Yuri rises at the same time to allow his seatmate to leave. With her back to him, the young blonde woman squeezes past Yuri, then hops off the train. Her hands buried deep in her coat pockets, the young woman hunches her shoulders against the cold and picks her way through a frost-covered city neighborhood. All of the pedestrians wear black and gray, blending into their dull surroundings. Now, a young man wearing round wire-frame glasses hands leaflets to workers leaving a factory. His sharp, angular features are drawn into a serious frown. Two policemen approach him from behind.
What's your name?
Antipov.
Address?
15 Petrovka.
I'll have these.
We have permission from the chief of police.
Yes? Well, you claim them at the station.
When?
Now. If you like.
Very well.
Pasha! He's my brother.
Well, take him home, miss, before he gets into trouble.
The young blonde woman drags him away. Pasha pulls more leaflets from his coat and hands them out.
Pasha, please.
It's got to be done.
Oh, Pasha, why has it got to be done?
For them. For the revolution.
Oh, Pasha, they don't want a revolution.
Yes, they do. They don't know it yet, but that's what they want.
Give me some of those, comrade.
Pasha, are you a Bolshevik?
No. The Bolsheviks don't like me, and I don't like them. They don't know right from wrong.
Oh, Pasha Antipov, you're an awful prig.
Pasha looks away. The young woman squeezes his arm affectionately.
Why did you tell him I was your brother?
Well, what else could I have told him?
You could have told him I was your fiancé.
Pasha, don't be silly. I'm...
She spots a horse-drawn sleigh waiting on a street.
Monsieur Komarovsky has come to see my mother on business. People gossip round here.
It's the system, Lara. People will be different after the revolution.
She smiles and takes a leaflet.
Will you come?
No, Pasha. I've got exams to take, Pasha. I've got to get my scholarship.
She shoots Pasha a warm smile and disappears into the doorway of a shabby building. Now Yuri hurries toward a house. He steps into an elegant foyer finished with velvet drapes, busts, and tapestries. Yuri bounds up an ornate staircase and sweeps into a parlor, greeting Anna Gromyko with a quick kiss on the cheek.
Hello, Auntie.
There's a letter for you.
Oh.
From Paris.
Oh. Lovely writing.
Lovely. She's coming home next month.
Dunya? Oh, that's good.
Yuri takes the letter and turns away to read it in private. Now the young blonde woman opens the door of a dress shop.
She does seem to be very well informed. Mm.
And such a handsome figure of her.
Good evening, Mama.
Larissa.
You can work in there, dear. Monsieur Komorowski's here.
Lara nods to her mother and opens the door to a back room where several women work at sewing machines. Lara smiles as she passes, then enters an alley leading to a small apartment. Inside, a bearded man lounges on a chaise.
Good evening, Larissa.
Good evening, monsieur.
The husky Komorowski removes his cigar to sip a drink in the dress shop.
He advises some very important people.
Yes, I know.
I believe he has government connections.
I don't know, I'm sure.
Isn't he very expensive?
Monsieur Komorowski advises me out of kindness, Baroness. He was a friend of my late husband's.
Oh, I see.
Lara's mother shows her customer out with an unsmiling nod. She closes the door, then runs a worried hand over her cheek. Later, as snow gently falls outside, Lara studies in the dim workroom, blowing on her fingers to keep them warm. She wears a white blouse with a black necktie, and her long blonde hair is pulled back into a girlish ponytail. Through a window, she sees Komorowski leaving the apartment.
Susie, if I can, my dear. Good night.
Lara hurriedly returns to her work. Wearing a black wool hat, the imposing Komorowski walks into the workroom. He pauses at the table, flips through one of her school books, and finds Pasha's leaflet.
Where'd you get this?
A friend gave it to me, Monsieur Komorowski.
Well, you're not to go to this peaceful demonstration.
No, monsieur.
It may not be as peaceful as they think. That's all I have to say. You tell your friend that she's a silly creature.
Yes, monsieur.
Lara flinches under his stern gaze. Komorowski hands her a set of keys. She takes them and walks into the dress shop toward the outer door. Komorowski follows.
How old are you now?
17, monsieur.
Komorowski grins slightly and picks up a veil of black and gold lace from a nearby dress form. He drapes it over Lara's head, then slowly wraps it over her shoulder for a glamorous, mysterious look. His approving grin fades into a dark, probing stare. Lara gazes back at him, her blue eyes wide and troubled. Trembling slightly, she pulls the veil from her head, revealing her full lips and youthful face. Komorowski grins in a mirthless laugh. Lara doesn't move as he takes the keys from her hand and unlocks the door to the dress shop. He lets himself out and closes the door behind him. She flinches as the door slams shut, then turns and watches Komorowski's retreating figure through the pebbled glass. Now Lara's mother sits with a shawl wrapped around her shoulders and a thermometer in her mouth. Wearing a tuxedo, Komorowski paces impatiently behind her. He snatches the thermometer out of her mouth and hands it to Lara to read. Lara wears a gray silk gown with a high neck and puffed sleeves.
103.
Oh, dear. And I was so looking forward to it. Well, never mind. I'll be all right here. You will take Lara, won't you, Viktor Ippolitovich? So stupid of me. It's her first long gown. And she...
I think we'd better call it right off.
Yes, I'll stay with you.
Nonsense. I'll be perfectly all right. I've got a book. So disappointing for her, Viktor Ippolitovich. So little opportunity to mix with good society.
Lara hangs her head.
Very well. Get your coat. We're late if we're going. I want to avoid Kropotkin Street.
Now hundreds of people, including Pasha Antipov, shuffle down a dark, snowy street in a slow-moving march. They carry several large red banners, the only splashes of color against the drab gray landscape. Several uniformed policemen walk alongside the procession, casually checking the orderly crowd. A somber-faced little girl walks in the demonstration parade holding her mother's hand. Now, Yuri and Anna Gromyko step outside onto the balcony of their house. Anna reads the banners as they pass by.
Brotherhood and freedom. Yuri, what splendid words. Justice, equality, and bread. Don't you think they're splendid?
Yes, I do.
Alexander Gromyko steps out.
Brotherhood and fiddlesticks, you're frozen through. You've no right, Anushka. It isn't fair.
Now Lara and Komarovsky arrive at a plush hotel.
Ah, we've given you up, monsieur.
My niece. Coat, Lara.
Lara hands her coat to an attendant.
Charmant.
Come, my dear.
The maitre d' leads them into the opulent dining room, which glows with red carpet and red velvet wallpaper. The tables are filled with men in tuxedos, uniformed officers, and women in long, glittering evening gowns. Lara and Komarovsky wind their way through the maze of tables and dancing couples. The maitre d' seats them at a table for two. Komarovsky opens the leather-bound menu. Clara imitates him.
How's the Fort de Vaux Gascogne?
As always, monsieur.
All right, and not too much mustard.
Not too much mustard, monsieur.
Lara closes her menu.
Jambon farci en croûte.
Oui, mademoiselle. Wine, monsieur?
A little light wine, yes.
Oui, monsieur. Mademoiselle.
This place must be dreadfully expensive, Monsieur Komarovsky.
It is. Why not Viktor Ippolitovich?
I can't.
Lara ducks her head with a shy, nervous grin. Komarovsky smiles and stands up. Later, they waltz among the other couples, dancing stiffly and holding each other at a distance. Komarovsky stares at Lara. She avoids his gaze, but steals an occasional peek. Later, they return to the table. Lara hesitates, then leans forward to speak.
Mother made this dress.
Very nice.
She's clever, isn't she?
Your mother, yes. Fine little woman.
Lara stares at him, then glances up. Other diners turn toward the window. Outside, the demonstrators gather in front of the hotel. Several hundred demonstrators fill the street, bundled in coats and hats. They raise their heads to aim their voices at the windows of the hotel. Inside, Komarovsky glances around the dining room, where patrons sit motionless, tense, and still.
No doubt they'll sing in tune after the revolution.
Komarovsky raises his glass to acknowledge the applause. Lara beams proudly at him from across the table. Komarovsky smiles and pours her some of his wine. He clinks her glass in a toast. Outside, the demonstrators move away from the hotel. Now, Komarovsky and Lara spin around the dance floor, holding each other close. Lara gazes happily into Komarovsky's eyes. He beams at her. Later, they ride in Komarovsky's horse-drawn sleigh. Komarovsky glances at Lara, who wears a white lace scarf wrapped around her head. Lara stares straight ahead, her eyes shifting nervously. When he looks away, she steals a quick glance at his profile. A sergeant on horseback watches them pass, then turns to his men who stand waiting inside a gated courtyard.
Prepare!
The dragoons pull blankets from their horses. In the carriage, Lara turns to Komarovsky with wide eyes. Komarovsky leans toward her, takes her chin in his white-gloved hands, then grabs her face and presses his lips fiercely against her mouth. Lara pulls away, gasping, then closes her eyes and submits to another hard kiss. In unison, the dragoons mount their horses. Wearing long gray coats over their uniforms and plumed hats, they file after the sergeant, riding through the gates and into the snowy street. Elsewhere, led by Pasha and a handful of musicians, the demonstrators trudge through the snow in ragged rows, carrying their banners high in the air. The stone-faced dragoons line up at the end of a deserted street, sitting on their horses and waiting. The The dragoons watch as the demonstrators round the corner. The marchers hunch their shoulders against the cold, hands jammed into their coat pockets. As the protesters march past his house, Yuri hurries out onto the balcony, pulling a coat over his shoulders. He pauses at the sight of the parade heading straight toward the soldiers lined up at the other end of the street. Down below, his hat in his hands, a grim-faced pasha waves his arms vigorously to the music.
No saber!
In swift unison, the dragoons whip their sabers from their scabbards. Another protest leader taps Pasha on the shoulder. Pasha turns and stares as the dragoons canter toward them. The parade falters and stops. The dragoons urge their horses into a gallop. As they break into a charge, the protesters scatter. Pasha stands transfixed, then is swept aside by the panicking crowd. Yuri gapes in helpless sympathy as the soldiers charge into the crowd, sabers drawn. The protesters turn and run. A pistol falls to the ground, then Pasha stoops to retrieve it. A musician carrying a sousaphone falls, trampled by the stampede. Frozen in fear, a little girl searches the crowd for her mother. The dragoons bear down on the fleeing protesters. Yuri shivers in horror as he watches from the balcony, his wide, dark eyes fill with tears. Inside, Alexander Gromyko hurries out of his room, pulling a dressing gown over his pajamas. As he joins Yuri on the balcony, his mouth drops open in astonishment.
What?
Yuri hesitates, then rushes inside. In the street, the soldiers disperse, leaving dozens of bodies lying crumpled on the ground. Several people try to crawl to safety. Yuri sprints out the front door, then pauses. Pools of bright red blood stain the white snow. Now, outside Komorowski's house, Lara seats herself in his sleigh. Komorowski settles a fur blanket across her lap.
Good night, dear.
The sleigh rolls away. Komorowski watches it leave, then hurries inside. Now, soldiers toss bodies into the back of a wagon. Yuri kneels beside one victim, bandaging her leg.
Go inside your house, please. All these people will be taken care of. Go inside, please. All these people will be taken care of. Go inside, please.
Yuri glares at the soldiers. A bearded sergeant stops beside him and salutes impatiently.
Get inside.
Alexander rushes to Yuri's side.
Yuri, please. No trouble.
Take him inside, sir, or I'll put him under arrest.
Yuri, I beg you. Tonya's coming home tomorrow.
With a last furious glare at the sergeant, Yuri turns and retreats into the house. Alexander closes the door behind them. On the street, the soldiers load the last victim into a wagon, and right away, snow falls. Now Lara slips into the front door of her mother's dress shop. She wanders through the shadows and catches sight of herself in a mirror. Her white lace scarf dangles loosely over her blonde hair like a veil. Lara stares at her reflection, tears coursing slowly down her cheeks. Daytime, at a train station.
Yuri!
Tonya!
As the train pulls into the station, Yuri runs alongside, chasing after Tonya. Alexander and Anna Gromyko wait on a nearby bench. Alexander pats his wife's arm in excitement. When the train stops, Yuri rushes up to Tonya's empty window and searches inside. Dressed in pink, Tonya pops her head out the door with a bright, teasing smile.
Yuri!
Yuri lifts her onto the platform and kisses her cheek.
Where?
Tonya spots her father, who gazes at her with a proud, loving smile. She rushes into his arms.
Daddy!
Alexander hugs her close.
Kermanoff, that's enough. Your mother. Your mother.
Anna struggles to her feet.
Mommy!
Tonya runs toward her mother. Anna throws her arms around Tonya, then sags back onto the bench.
Mommy, how are you?
Me, fit as a fiddle. Turn round.
Tonya models her fashionable fur-trimmed outfit.
Well, they've taught us something.
Yuri arrives, followed by two porters wheeling carts piled with trunks, cases, and hat boxes.
Oh, ho! Look at that.
Isn't Yuri looking well, Tonya?
Yes. Well, let's get along, dear.
Yes, run along, you two.
Yuri and Tonya walk ahead. Tonya pulls out a newspaper.
Oh, I bought you this. It has a piece in it about young Russian poets.
Oh, good. Thank you. Does it mention me?
It begins with you. You're the best.
Very intelligent nation, the French.
They have their heads together.
Yes, they're looking at the paper.
They're head over heels.
Anyushka, stop it. Good marriages are made in heaven, or some such place.
Now in the dress shop, wearing a black lace scarf and carrying a Bible, Lara walks toward the door.
Viktor Ippolitovich.
Pasha.
Lara heaves a sigh of relief.
I want to talk to you.
No, Pasha.
It's important.
All right.
She opens the door. A deep gash scars one side of Pasha's face.
You do it.
I didn't. A dragoon did.
Oh, Pasha, darling. Come.
Lara helps him inside.
Where's your mother?
Pasha.
Pasha sinks onto a sofa. With trembling hands, he takes off his hat, then winces painfully and removes his wire-rimmed glasses. Lara grimaces at the sight of his bloody, bruised face.
Pasha, I can't deal with this.
You've got any iodine?
Yes, but...
Get it.
Lara hurries to retrieve a blue medicine bottle. She hands it to Pasha, who stands in front of a dusty mirror. He uncorks the bottle, then carefully pours the iodine directly onto his wounds. He collapses.
Pasha, you must go to a hospital.
I don't for a day or two. Will you do something for me?
Oh, yes, what?
Pasha reaches into his pocket.
Hide this.
He pulls out the pistol. Lara gapes at him.
Oh, throw it away.
No. There'll be no more peaceful demonstrations. There were women and children, Lara, and they rode them down. Starving women asking for bread. And up on Tamskaya Avenue, the pigs were eating and drinking and dancing. Hide it for me.
Lara hesitates, then takes it.
Thanks, comrade.
Pasha, darling, I'm not your comrade.
Lara?
Pasha ducks behind a curtain. Lara hides the gun under a cushion.
Yes?
Oh, who's that?
It's only Pasha.
Oh. You came in very late last night, dear.
Time went so quickly.
Good. Are you going to church?
Yes.
Ah.
With a weak smile, Lara's mother walks away. Her steps slow, and she turns back with a troubled frown. Later at a church.
You know what our Lord said to the woman taken in adultery?
Yes, Father. He said, go and sin no more.
And did she?
I don't know, Father.
Nobody does, child. The flesh is not weak. It is strong. Only the sacrament of marriage will contain it. Remember that.
Lara nods. With her head bowed, she hurries out of the shadowy church and into the snow-covered street. Nighttime at a hotel. Wearing a tuxedo, Komarovsky jogs inside and up a flight of stairs. As he strides purposefully toward a closed door, a waiter rushes to stop him.
Monsieur, it's number 6 this evening, sir. A most important person here.
The waiter points to a door across the hall. Komarovsky opens the door. Lara waits inside, wearing a red velvet dress with a low-cut bodice trimmed with black beads.
Sorry I'm late.
I've been waiting nearly an hour, Victor.
Have you ordered?
No.
Well, should have done.
Komarovsky sits down and stares at Lara with a critical frown. He motions her to turn around. She does so slowly, modeling her dress. We see her reflection in a gilded mirror. Black satin gloves cover her arms. She wears a black choker around her neck, and her blonde hair pulled back into a soft chignon.
You chose it, Victor.
He pats the sofa beside him. Lara perches nervously on the edge.
You've grown up a lot, haven't you?
Yes.
What did you tell your mama tonight?
Victor, don't.
Oh. May I smoke?
Yes, of course.
Komarovsky leans the tip of his cigar into the flame of a lit candle.
You like it, don't you? Cigar smoke. Come along, my dear. Sante.
Sante.
They clink glasses. Lara takes a small sip of wine.
Drink, drink, drink. Up, up. Up.
Komarovsky tips the bottom of her glass, forcing her to gulp down the wine. He runs his fingers under her chin, wiping off a drop of wine, then slowly traces a finger across her full lips. Lara stares at him, her blue eyes wide with worry.
Where did you tell her we were going? Your mama.
She didn't ask.
That's because she knows.
No, she doesn't.
You both take an oath she doesn't, but she does. And you both know she does.
Victor, don't.
What?
Torment me.
Torment? Oh, what a little hypocrite it is.
She slaps him.
I'm going now, Victor.
Whenever you like, dear.
Lara rushes to put on her cape.
You see, you'll always come back.
She stands in front of a mirror and wipes her mouth with a gloved hand. As she starts to button her cape, Komarovsky moves to her side.
Stay, darling.
He slips the cape from her shoulders. Lara bows her head with a resigned frown. Later, outside the dress shop's apartment. Through a frosty window, we see a figure lying in bed, covered by a white sheet, writhing. Komarovsky rushes to the bedside, checks the woman, then goes to a desk and scribbles a hasty note. He sprints out of the room, stuffing the note into an envelope as he runs. Through the windows of the apartment, we see him dashing through a parlor, then into the dress shop, where he knocks over a chair as he flies toward the door. Komarovsky runs out into the dark, snowy night. His sleigh waits on the street, the bearded driver dozing in his seat. Komarovsky grabs him by the collar and shakes him.
Take this. And you show it to somebody if you lose your way. Professor Boris Kurt. And you find him. Now go on. Professor Boris Kurt!
Now in the Gromyko's library, guests crowd into the elegant room listening to a pianist. Anna sits with Yuri's medical professor, who fidgets and suppresses a yawn.
Boris, this is genius.
Really, I thought it was Rachmaninoff.
He retreats into the hallway, where Yuri and Tonya sit together on the stairs. Tonya's thick brown hair is pulled into a loose bun, framing her fair features.
Well, how's the general practitioner?
A bit scared of his finances.
Well, I don't think he need be. How do you like the idea of marrying a general practitioner?
I like it very much, but no general practitioner's asked me.
No. I thought you nomads are hot-blooded. So lot these general practitioners. Don't you fancy a professor of pathology?
Does he write poetry?
Alas, no.
Then I'm afraid it's out of the question. Excuse me.
Wearing a long white gown, Tonya goes downstairs to answer the door. Yuri and the doctor watch her with fond, appreciative smiles.
That's a marvelous girl, Shibaka.
Yes, I've noticed. It's for you.
Tonya takes the envelope from Komarovsky's driver and hands it to the doctor. Professor Kurt opens the envelope and reads the note with a frown.
How would the poet like to see a bit of general practice?
Later at the dress shop, Komarovsky opens the door for Professor Kurt and Yuri.
Boris, thank God you've come back. This is very good of you, Boris.
Yes, I know it is. My assistant.
How do you do?
Come on, where is she?
Up this way.
They follow him through the shop and workroom. Yuri pauses, glancing curiously around the drab workroom. Komarovsky leads them to the back apartment, where Professor Kurt leans over the figure on the bed.
When did she die?
About 8 o'clock this evening.
Kurt checks his pocket watch and scowls at Komarovsky, who takes a breath and rubs his fingers nervously.
You know what it was?
Komarovsky shows him an empty blue bottle. Kurt takes a sniff.
No,
I suppose you couldn't. Come on, then.
He and Yuri strip off their coats.
Turn her over.
They pull the sheet from the bed. Kurt's back obscures the patient as they turn him.
Right. Water.
Komarovsky hands him a pitcher. Kurt pours a clear solution from a vial into the water and swirls it around. He inspects the contents and carries the pitcher to the bed. Yuri pulls several feet of rubber tubing out of his medical bag.
Come on, dear.
Komarovsky watches with horrified eyes.
On,
we see the shadows of the two doctors on the wall as they work on the woman.
Now, my dear. That's it. That's it. Good.
Komarovsky turns and stumbles away, grabbing the bedpost for support. Later, Kurt reads a thermometer. Komarovsky stands beside him.
She gonna live.
Water.
Kurt hands him the pitcher with a dismissive glance. Komarovsky leaves. Yuri dries his hands with a towel.
She is, isn't she?
Yes. Anything. There's a man. Speaks on public platforms. In with the government. In with the liberals. In with everybody. And he risks it all. For that.
Amelia.
That's not how poets see them, is it? That's how GPs see them. That's how they are.
You know, from here, she looks beautiful.
Zhivago, I think you're a hard case.
Komarovsky returns with a pitcher.
Laura.
There's a child in the case, a child, her daughter. Oh, for heaven's sake, Boris.
She might have thought about Laura before she did it. Does the girl know?
I bet she does.
Is she here?
Yes.
Well, tell her that her mother's going to live. Wait a minute, Victor. Yuri.
Yes, of course.
Yuri leaves them alone.
What are we going to say about this?
Must we say anything?
I'm afraid so. I'm taking her to hospital. I have to say something.
Well, that needn't be difficult, Boris.
Yuri wanders into the dress shop's darkened workroom, staring curiously around. Overhead, a light fixture trembles as a train rumbles by. Yuri pauses to stare out the window where snow falls in a gentle shower. He bows his head wearily and resumes his aimless pacing. Yuri stops, then continues wandering around the room as if searching for something. His hand trails along the furniture. He touches Lara's school books and pauses to leaf through the pages of a geometry assignment. Yuri smiles to himself and keeps walking. Yuri turns back and paces toward a dark window Yuri gazes past his reflection into a room on the other side. A woman's hand rests limply on the arm of a chair. Komarovsky enters the room with a lamp, chasing away the shadows. Lara sleeps in an armchair. Komarovsky shakes her gently. Lara leaps out of the chair and throws her arms around him. Yuri watches with wide, sad eyes as Lara covers Komarovsky's neck and hands with grateful kisses. Komarovsky shoots an uncomfortable glance at the open door, then gently eases her back into the chair. As Lara clings to his hand, Komarovsky breaks her grip, kisses her hand, then picks up the lamp and goes to the door. He starts to pull it shut, then looks up and sees Yuri watching him through the window. He freezes. The two men lock eyes for a long moment. Lara leans her head back against the chair, sobbing with relief and exhaustion. As Komarovsky leaves with the lamp, the room goes dark again. Now Komarovsky returns to Amelia's bedroom, where Professor Kurt packs his things.
What's the name of your assistant?
Zhivago.
Andreevich?
Yes, why? Do you know?
No, I knew his father, slightly.
Right.
Komarovsky picks up Kurt's black leather medical bag and leads him out of the room. Later, Yuri rides in Kurt's sleigh.
Cheer up, Yuri. I'll have the poor bitch in hospital tonight.
What's his name?
That's Victor Komarovsky. Says he knows you.
He executed my father's will.
Oh.
Uncle Alex turned it down. By Komarovsky's account, there wasn't much in it, and what there was belonged to Komarovsky.
Oh, he's a very good businessman. That title is crooked. Very good company. There's life. He's had a bad scare tonight.
Daytime in a drab, nearly deserted cafe. Lara and Komarovsky sit across from each other at a table. Komarovsky rubs his eyes wearily. A waiter brings a cup of coffee for Lara and a glass of wine for Komarovsky, who inspects the glass, then wipes off the rim with his handkerchief.
You don't mind coming here, do you, Viktor Ipolitovich?
No, it reminds me of my youth.
He takes a large gulp.
I went to the hospital again.
In?
She wants you to go and forgive her for her suspicions.
You can tell her the truth if you like, Larissa.
Komarovsky finishes the wine with an impatient swallow. Pasha enters the cafe with a quick, stiff stride.
Is this him?
Yes.
He knows nothing about...
No!
Lara hurries to greet Pasha, who takes off his hat as he approaches the table.
Pasha, this is Monsieur Komarovsky.
The two men shake hands.
Please.
Wearing a serious frown, Pasha takes a seat beside Lara. Komarovsky settles back in his chair.
Will you eat?
No, thank you.
I hope you don't think this is impertinent, Pavel Pavlovich.
Not at all.
I have advised Larissa's mother for many years. I'm interested in what happens to her.
I have to tell
later.
You, and that is this. I am committed to the revolution. Nothing. Not even Lara. Has more importance for me.
Pasha holds Lara's hand.
You misunderstand. Your political views do not concern me. So far as that goes, I'm probably more in sympathy than you suppose. I have a few contacts of my own which might surprise you. How do you propose to live?
I've been offered a teaching post.
May I know where?
Gradov. It's in the Urals.
I know it. Not much of a place.
It's a beautiful country, Monsieur Komarovsky.
Be a quiet life, won't it?
That's what we want.
Well, you'll excuse me. Will your salary be adequate?
Adequate, not more.
Komarovsky studies Pasha's tight-lipped expression.
Pavel Pavlovich, my chief impression is, and I mean no offense, is that you're very young.
Monsieur Komarovsky, I hope I don't offend you. Do people improve with age?
They grow a little more tolerant.
Because they have more to tolerate in themselves. If people don't marry young, what do they bring to their marriage?
A little experience.
I'm 26. My mother died needlessly when I was 8. My father died in prison. I have fended for myself. I've worked my way through higher school and university. I am familiar with things that you can hardly guess at.
All this is an experience of a kind, certainly.
I've no amorous experience, if that's what you mean. None whatever. Lara's 17. That speaks for itself. You probably find this situation comic. We don't. We're going to be married next year.
Lara and Komarovsky stare down at the table. Lara fidgets nervously. Pasha pushes his chair back and stands up.
I hope I haven't offended you by speaking plainly.
Not at all, admirable.
Pasha kisses Lara on the forehead. With a curt bow to Komarovsky, he strides away.
A young crusader.
He's
a very fine young man. That's obvious.
Very generous, Mr. Komarovsky.
Pasha leaves the cafe.
Larissa, I want to talk to you.
Later, they arrive at the dress shop. Lara closes the door behind them.
Mr. Komarovsky, if you...
I beg you, drop this affectation of addressing me as Monsieur Komarovsky. Under the circumstances, I find it rather ridiculous. Lara, I am determined to save you from a dreadful error. There are two kinds of men, and only two. And that young man is one kind. He is high-minded. He is pure. He's the kind of man that the world pretends to look up to and, in fact, despises. He is the kind of man who breeds unhappiness, particularly in women. Do you understand?
No.
I think you do. There's another kind. Not high-minded, not pure, but alive. Now that your taste at this time should incline towards the juvenile is understandable. But for you to marry that boy would be a disaster. Because there's two kinds of women.
She puts her hands to her ears. He yanks them away.
There are two kinds of women, and you, as we well know, are not the first kind.
Komarovsky returns her slap.
You, my dear, are a slut.
I am not.
We'll see.
Lara tries to run. Komarovsky grabs her roughly and picks her up off her feet. Lara kicks and struggles in vain. He throws her onto a bed and pins her with his body, smothering her face and neck with violent kisses. Lara tries to shove him away, yanking and tugging at his coat. Gradually, she stops struggling. Komarovsky pauses, then kisses her angrily on the mouth. Lara submits, wrapping her arm around his neck and pulling him closer. Later, wearing his coat and hat, Komarovsky strides toward the door.
And don't delude yourself, this was rape. That would flatter us both.
He walks out. With her skirt around her knees, Lara sits up and watches Komarovsky's retreating figure through the pebbled glass door. Sweat beads her face. Her long blonde hair is disheveled. Lara searches the room with wide, desperate eyes. She sees Pasha's gun. Later, at Komarovsky's house, Lara rings the doorbell, then peeks at the gun hidden inside a wide fur muff that covers her hands. A servant opens the door.
The master's not at home, Miss Lara.
Not at home?
No, he went to the Sventitsky's Christmas party.
Lara runs down the steps.
Are you going now, miss? Please don't say I told you.
No, thank you, Piotr.
Merry Christmas, Miss Lara.
Well, thank you, and Merry Christmas to you.
Now, in an elegant ballroom, Yuri and Tonya run into Komarovsky, who forces a smile.
Merry Christmas, Yuri Andreevich.
Komarovsky bows and walks away. He retreats into a room upholstered in red velvet and takes his place at a poker table. Outside, wearing a bitter scowl, a fur muff clutched tightly in her hands, Lara hurries through a raucous neighborhood. She weaves through the crowd of drunken revelers, then turns onto a quiet street. Her step slows. Finally, Lara stops walking and leans against a store window, her head bowed despondently. A man walks past. Pasha stops.
Lara, what's the matter?
She glares at him and walks away. Pasha follows.
We had an appointment this evening, Lara. Where are you going?
Haven't you read the letter? I left a letter.
I've not been home. I'm going home now.
Lara pulls away from him.
Where are you going, Lara? I have a right to know. Lara, what's in this letter?
Pasha grabs her arm.
What's in this letter? Lara, are you breaking?
It's all in the letter.
What is?
Everything. Don't!
Lara yanks her arm free and hurries across the street. With a puzzled frown, Pasha watches her disappear around a corner, then starts to follow her. He crosses the street and pauses. Lara is gone. Men in tuxedos and women in long gowns climb the front steps of a brightly lit mansion. A servant wearing a formal red uniform closes the door behind them. Pasha glances up at the glowing windows, which suddenly go dark. Upstairs in the ballroom, several of the women guests light tapers on a tall Christmas tree. Lara watches from behind a stone pillar. When the lights turn back on, she moves away. Still holding her lit candle, Tonya stares curiously at her. Yuri approaches Tonya from behind and blows out the candle. Tonya beams and follows him onto the dance floor. Still wearing her fur coat and muff, Lara shoots a furtive glance around the room.
Yuri, there's an extraordinary girl at this party.
I know. I'm dancing with her.
Now at the poker table.
You're keen tonight, Victor.
I like to win.
Silence! Silence, everybody!
The hostess.
Silence, please! I have a very delightful announcement to make.
She takes Yuri and Tonya by the hands.
Oh, Madame Sventitsky.
Yes, why not?
Aha! I have to announce that Dr. Yuri Zhivago, yes, Dr. Zhivago, he came third in all Moscow. Now listen, please, please. Dr. Zhivago is betrothed in marriage to...
In the poker room, Lara stands with her pistol pointed at Komorowski. Smoke rises from the barrel. The guests gather around as Komorowski slowly stands. He sees blood running down his wrist, then collapses back into his chair. Several men wrestle the gun away from Lara.
Victor. My dear man.
What?
Get her out. Get her out.
Yes, yes. I'll get the police.
No! I don't want you to get the police.
Leave me!
I do not want the police. I just want you to get her off!
The crowd turns toward the doorway, where Pasha struggles with two servants. He wrenches himself free and stalks into the ballroom. The gaping crowd parts as he heads towards Lara, standing at the other end of the room, restrained by two men.
Let her go.
The men release their grip on Lara's arm. As her knees buckle, Pasha catches her. He turns and glares at Komorowski, then takes Lara by the elbow and leads her away. Tonya watches Lara with a sad, sympathetic gaze, then shoots a curious glance at Yuri, who stares at Lara as she disappears into the crowd.
Please, my friends, please give way, yes?
Komorowski's friends help him out of the room. The guests gather in small groups, chattering excitedly. Later, in the bathroom, Yuri bandages Komorowski's arm.
Our destinies seem to be interwoven, don't they?
Yes.
I was a close friend of your father.
I knew you were his business partner.
Rather more than that, I was present at his death. Also, I'm in contact with your brother.
Yevgraf?
I should say I'm in contact with those who are in contact with him. Oh, I disagree with Bolshevism. Thank you.
You seem to know your trade.
But I can still admire Bolsheviks as men. Shall I tell you why?
Yes.
He glances over his shoulder.
They may win.
I'd like to meet him, Yevgraf. He sent me a marvelous letter. He likes my poetry.
That would have pleased your father. Your father was not a bad man, Yuri, if I may call you Yuri.
I hardly knew him.
You perhaps may not credit this, but he was devoted to your mother.
Yuri searches Komarovsky's face with wide, uncertain eyes, then bows his head sadly. Komarovsky puffs on a cigar.
I suppose I may continue to rely on your professional discretion.
Yuri washes his hands.
You mean, will I tell anyone the truth about
that girl? That's what I mean, yes.
You may continue to rely on my professional, etc.
You are fastidious, aren't you?
What happens to a girl like that when a man like you has finished with her?
Interested? I give it to you.
Komarovsky smirks from behind his cigar.
You shouldn't smoke. You've had a shock.
Yuri takes the cigar from Komarovsky's mouth and tosses it into the commode.
I give it to you, Yuri Andreevich. Wedding present.
Komarovsky walks away. Now, outside Pasha's flat, we see Pasha and Lara through a frost-covered window. A candle glows on the sill as Pasha starts to read Lara's letter. The small flame melts a circle in the ice. Pasha finishes reading and pinches the bridge of his nose with a painful squint. He turns to glare at Lara, who listens for a moment, then nods sadly. Pasha crosses the room and yells at her. She nods again. He raises his arm to strike her, and Lara cringes. Pasha stops himself and sinks onto the bed beside her, his back turned. Lara bows her head in misery, then looks up and stares at the flickering candle with wide, haunted eyes. Outside, three white horses pull Yuri and Tonya's sleigh past the building. Yuri cranes his neck to stare at the window.
Yuri, where have you seen that girl before?
What makes you think I've seen her before?
Haven't you?
Yes.
Where?
I'm not supposed to say. It was on a case. Not very nice.
No, don't tell me if you're not supposed to say.
Yuri smiles affectionately, takes Tonya into his arms and kisses her. Upstairs, a sobbing Pasha reaches out for Lara. As she takes his hand in both of hers, Pasha turns and buries his head on her shoulder. Lara covers his face with kisses, and they hold each other tightly. Daytime at a military parade. A gray-bearded priest wearing a gold-trimmed robe makes the sign of the cross to bless soldiers as they march past. Wearing a dark hat and jacket, a young Yevgraf Shevato watches the parade with a casual frown.
In bourgeois terms, it was a war between the Allies and Germany. In Bolshevik terms, it was a war between the Allied and German upper classes. And which of them won was a matter of indifference.
Yuri and the Gromykos watch from their balcony with grim, somber frowns. Tonya holds a swaddled infant. Below, Yevgraf joins a group of civilian men as they tag onto the end of the parade. On the sidewalk, women wave and cheer.
I was ordered by the party to enlist. I gave my name as Petrov. They were shouting for victory all over Europe, praying for victory to the same God. My task, the party's task, was to organize defeat. From defeat would spring the revolution. And the revolution would be victory for us. The party looked to the conscript peasants, most of them wearing their first good pair of boots. When the boots wore out, they'd be ready to listen. When the time came, I was able to take three battalions with me out of the front line, the best day's work I ever did. But for the moment, there was nothing to be done. There were too many volunteers, like me. Mostly, it was mere hysteria. But there were men with better motives, men who saw the times were critical and wanted a man's part.
Lara holds an infant as Pasha approaches a recruiter.
Unhappy men, too. Unhappy in their jobs. Unhappy with their wives. Doubting themselves. Happy men don't volunteer. They wait their turn, and thank God if their age or work delays it.
Yuri at a hospital.
The ones who got back home at the price of an arm or an eye or a leg. These were the lucky ones.
Corpses lie frozen and half buried by snow.
Even Comrade Lenin underestimated both the anguish of that 900-mile-long front and our cursed capacity for suffering.
Men stand in a trench cut into the snow.
By the second winter of the war, the boots had worn out. But the line still held. Their greatcoats fell to pieces on their backs. Their rations were irregular. Half of them went into action without arms, led by men they didn't trust.
Come on, you bastards!
And those they did trust...
Come on, comrades! Come on! Come on!
The ragged conscripts heaved themselves out of the trench to follow Pasha. Waving a bayonet attached to a rifle, Pasha leads the charge.
Come on!
A shell explodes at Pasha's feet. He stumbles and falls. His wire-rimmed glasses land in the snow. Leaving dozens of fallen soldiers behind, the conscripts continue to charge forward. Now a soldier stands in a trench, nearly knee-deep in mud.
At last, they did what all the armies dreamed of doing. They began to go home.
One by one, the soldiers lay down their rifles and climb out of the trench.
That was the beginning of the revolution.
Hundreds of conscripts trudge wearily through the snow. From the opposite direction, a troop of Russian soldiers marches in tight formation. Yuri brings up the rear, driving a Red Cross wagon. The white-mustached colonel from the street massacre rides in front of the troops. He spots the deserting soldiers.
Deserters.
Replacements.
Bundled in a drab gray scarf, Lara rides in a medical wagon with the deserting army, which is twice as large as the new battalion. The two groups converge on the icy dirt road. The approaching soldiers raise their rifles to their shoulders. The deserters begin to scatter.
Come back! Stick together! Stick together and we'll be all right. And be ready for them.
The troops meet head on. Riding on horseback, the colonel leads his men through the crowd of deserters, who part for them as they march through. The soldiers, wearing clean new uniforms, cast uneasy glances at the deserters pressing in on either side. The colonel scowls and juts out his chin in scornful defiance at the threatening mob.
Wait, wait, join us. Turn around, lads.
The deserters grab at their replacements.
Come on, lads. Turn around. Things to the slaughter. Look at you.
Who is me? Turn around, lads!
The colonel glares furiously at his men. As he passes, the deserters swarm around the new conscripts, enveloping them in their midst. A young captain leaps on top of a barrel and points his gun to the sky.
Listen, lads. 10 miles up that road are the Germans.
Rubbish!
Not rubbish. They're coming. And they're coming fast. You've let them in. They're coming for your wives, your houses, your country.
Your country, officer?
Yes, my country. And
he falls through the lid of the barrel. The captain sinks into the water, which turns red with his blood. A grizzled, bearded soldier lowers his rifle.
Get back in your ranks! Get back in your ranks! Get back in your ranks with me!
The deserters drag the remaining officers down from their horses. The colonel glowers at the unruly mob. The colonel raises his sword to slash at the men that crowd around his horse. They drag him down and pass him through the mob, kicking and thrashing in protest. Finally, the elderly colonel pitches headfirst to the ground and disappears. A half dozen soldiers beat him viciously with the butts of their rifles. One soldier holds up the colonel's hat with a victorious wave. Smiling and cheering, a massive troop continues down the road, celebrating with their arms around each other's shoulders. Wearing a sad, troubled frown, Lara heads back toward the victims. The deserters leer at her as she passes. Yuri also fights his way toward the victims, now stripped of their coats and hats. The last of the deserting troop retreats, leaving Yuri and Lara behind. Yuri turns and sees Lara wandering among the bodies.
Are you a nurse?
Yes.
Are you all right?
Yes.
Then help me.
Lara helps Yuri turn a wounded soldier onto his back. Together, they start tending to his injuries. Later, the setting sun glows faint pink over the horizon as the Red Cross wagon pulls to a stop. Yuri jumps out the back, then helps Lara.
Doctor, I think I ought to tell you I'm not a trained nurse, I'm a volunteer.
I see.
Right. Why did you volunteer?
I came here to find my husband.
Very gently. Have you ever seen an operation?
Yes.
We'll manage.
Now, using the tailgate of the wagon as an operating table, Yuri frowns in concentration as he works on a soldier's eye. Lara dabs at the blood with a cotton ball.
They're in the next village, brothers! The Germans!
Your Honor!
Keep still.
Some soldiers hesitate and move on without them. Lara casts a worried glance into the darkness, then gazes at Yuri's profile, silhouetted against the light from a single lantern. Her eyes widen in a faint, curious smile. Later, Yuri closes the wound with a final suture. He nods to Lara, who snips the thread.
Did you find your husband?
No.
Your Honor.
Yes, we'd better be off.
Morning. The remaining soldiers plod in front of and behind the wagon, driven by Yuri. With the nurse's white scarf wrapped around her blonde hair, Lara takes a long drink from a canteen. Yuri watches her with an admiring smile.
You know, you often look at me as though you knew me.
I have seen you. 4 years ago, Christmas Eve.
Lara glances at Yuri.
Were you there? No wonder you look at me. Did you know Victor Komarovsky?
Yes, I did. That young man who took you away.
My husband.
A lot of courage. He made the rest of us look very feeble. As a matter of fact, I thought you both did. Good man to shoot at.
I'd give anything never to have met him.
Later, the troops rest in the shade by the side of a dirt road. As a truck rolls past them, riders toss out newspapers by the handfuls. The soldiers leap to their feet, grabbing the papers eagerly. Yuri snatches one in his hands and starts to read as Lara and the Bolshevik soldier look over his shoulder. An elderly soldier picks up a paper and stares at it with a puzzled frown. He walks over to Yuri with an inquiring look.
The Tsar's in prison. Lenin's in Moscow. Civil war has started.
Good!
Civil war? Good!
Not good, comrade nurse, inevitable. But Lenin! In Moscow!
This Lenin, will he be the new Tsar then?
Listen, Daddy, no more Tsars, no more masters.
Only workers in a worker's state. How about that?
Are you a doctor?
Yes.
Follow me, please.
Yuri and Lara exchange a glance, then follow the official through the crowd. Later, the Red Cross wagon pulls to a stop in front of a dilapidated mansion. Five bodies wrapped in sheets lie in the courtyard. Yuri climbs out of the wagon, strides to the front door of the makeshift hospital, and pauses. Hundreds of wounded men crowd a filthy, cavernous hall. They stare at Yuri with wide, expectant eyes. Wearing her nurse's scarf and gray Red Cross cloak, Lara walks in and joins him. Yuri scowls at the official and gestures helplessly at the patients who share beds and blankets with their injured comrades.
I can't deal with this.
Order the provisional government. You'll have to try, friend.
Yuri and Lara follow the official further into the hospital. Now, Tonya reads from a letter to Alex Gromyko.
If you could see how hard we have been working here, I feel sure you would forgive me, dear, for not writing more regularly.
When was that written?
July 20th.
8 weeks.
But now the war seems really to have stopped. The hospital is emptying, and I shall have more time. I may even get time to write some verse, if I've not forgotten how to. Oh, I do hope so. Larissa Antipova is still here, and I admire her more and more. She seems to have that strange gift of healing which doctors don't believe in. She often does the wrong things, but it always seems to work out right.
Tonya forces a smile.
How is Uncle Alex? Can he still get his English tobacco?
Oh, that he could.
Can Sasha say his letters yet? And how is Auntie Anna? Oh, didn't get my letter. Most of all, my dearest, how are you?
Strangely upsetting. He doesn't know she's dead. Can't see what difference it makes. There is it again! I wish they'd decide, once and for all, which gang of hooligans constitutes the government of this country.
Outside the hospital, several men load mattresses onto a wagon. Yuri smiles at the elderly soldier.
Cheer up, Sergei. Don't you want to go home?
It's fighting at home, Your Honor. I've had enough. Red guards and white guards. The old man's had enough. Your Honor is a kind gentleman. And the nurse is a kind lady.
Yuri walks into the empty hospital. A vase full of yellow sunflowers stands out against the drab gray surroundings. Yuri smiles to himself, then goes to a back room where Lara irons.
Finished?
Just about.
Lara heats the metal iron on a stove and runs it over a bedsheet. Yuri watches her for a moment, then leans against a table and sighs.
In a couple of weeks, you'll be with your little girl.
If I can get on a train. I want to be with Katia more than anything in the world.
Yes, of course.
But now that we're going, I feel sad. Sad. Really sad.
Well, we've been here some time.
Yes. This must have been a lovely house once. Don't you think?
What are you going to do?
In Gradov?
Yes.
I'll be all right.
I wish I could think so.
Lara sprinkles water onto the sheet and smooths it with her iron, and Yuri watches.
I could run a laundry.
Lara smiles.
What will you do?
I suppose I'll go back to the hospital.
It's funny to think of you there.
She pulls another piece of laundry from a line.
I used to pass it on my way to school.
Do you ever come to Moscow?
From Gradov.
If only there were someone to look after you. But of course, if there were, I'd be destroyed by jealousy.
Shivago, don't.
She puts down her iron and gazes at him pleadingly.
Dear, don't, please.
Smoke billows up from the shirt, scorched by the iron.
Now look what you've made me do.
Lara busies herself with the shirt, then meets Yuri's anguished, searching gaze.
Yuri, we've been together 6 months. on the road and here. And we've not done anything you'll have to lie about to Tonya. I don't want you to have to lie about me. Do you understand that, Yuri?
Yuri nods, his eyes filled with tears.
You understand everything.
Lara forces a bright smile and returns to her ironing. Later, she and several of the soldiers head for the door where the Bolshevik soldier waits.
Come on, comrades, I'm in a hurry.
Going home, Kirill.
Home, Your Excellency. Petrograd. I'm joining the Red Guard.
What about your wife?
Sometimes, comrade nurse, women have to wait. Right. Goodbye, honored doctor. Want some advice?
Set the millstone to the barley.
That's right. Adapt yourself.
Her eyes heavy, Lara bows her head and allows the others to go ahead of her. The soldiers shake hands with Yuri as they leave.
Goodbye, Ivanov.
Goodbye, Your Honor.
Goodbye, Andrei. Goodbye, Simeon.
The soldier hugs him tightly.
I'll never forget, Your Honor. Never.
Goodbye, Zhivago.
They shake hands.
Thank you.
Lara hurries out the door. Without looking back, she walks toward the wagon and climbs in. Yuri says goodbye to the last of the soldiers, then wanders out onto the front porch. As dry leaves drift to the ground, he watches Lara, seated near Kuril the Bolshevik. Her blonde hair, knotted in a bun, peeks out from beneath her gray wool hat. As the wagon bounces away, Yuri's eyes fill with tears.
For my brothers!
The wagon disappears. Lips trembling, Yuri goes back inside. His body shaking with sobs, Yuri stumbles through the front room, empty except for the vase of sunflowers. The heavy blooms droop lifelessly, scattering dried petals onto the table. Now, in the wagon, Lara stares at the horizon as Kuril loads his rifle.
The doctor is a gentleman.
Right, written all over him.
He's a good man.
God rock, good men.
Lara whips around to glare at Kuril. He responds with a frank, challenging stare. Later at the Gromyko house, Tonya steps out onto the balcony, staring intently at a man approaching in the distance. Trucks and soldiers fill the littered street.
Yuri!
She waves. The man waves back, then breaks into a run.
Oh.
Tonya dashes through the now dilapidated house and down the stairs to meet him. As he steps through the front door, Yuri drops his bag and throws open his arms. Tonya wraps her arms around his neck in a tight hug. During the reunion, several dozen people emerge from various rooms of the house, including a man with a red armband.
Yuri, this is Comrade Yelkin, our local delegate. He lives here.
How do you do? Welcome.
Comrade Kaprujina.
Welcome.
It is not for you to welcome us, comrade.
Comrade Kaprujina is the chairman of the residence committee.
Yes, of course.
Your discharge papers.
Yes. I sign them myself, I'm afraid.
The two communists eye Yuri's paper with dour faces and suspicious frowns.
Holy Cross. What?
Holy Cross Hospital, it's on...
The Second Reformed Hospital.
Good. It needed reforming.
The comrades remain stone-faced. Yuri follows Tonya upstairs.
Medicals report to their place of work at once.
Yes, I believe there's typhus.
You've been listening to rumor mongers, comrade. There is no typhus in our city.
Well, that's good news. I'll report tomorrow.
When you've started work, you'll get a ration book.
I've
have always worked.
Tonya drags Yuri upstairs. Everyone watches them with curious frowns.
Whatever's the matter?
You are.
There was living space for 13 families in this one house.
Yes. Yes, this is a better arrangement, comrades. More just.
Tonya suppresses a grin and leads Yuri into their room. She closes the door behind them.
But it is more just. Why does it sound so funny?
Yuri puts down his bag and stares at the once elegant room, now shabby and scattered with miscellaneous belongings. Tonya wrings her hands nervously.
Is it good to be home?
Yuri grabs Tonya in a tight, reassuring hug. A somber-faced little boy peeks out from behind a curtain.
Sasha. Who else? This is your daddy, Sasha.
Sasha.
Sasha!
Yuri blinks at the slap.
Naughty boy.
No, don't say that.
May I come in?
Alexander. Later, the adults finish dinner.
Watch carefully. I'm about to ignite the last half of the last cigar in Moscow. Good meal?
Very. Say something. That was very good, Tonya.
Oh, that was nothing.
She's been saving that salami for 3 months.
Have you, darling?
I got it for a clock.
She's a marvel. Coffee, you observe.
Stop it, Daddy. He knows I'm a marvel. Did you write any poetry?
Quite a lot.
Is it good?
Yes, I think so.
Can I see it?
Well, of course.
What happened to Nurse Antipova? Your letters were full of her.
Yes, I suppose they were.
Mm-hmm. It was the girl who shot Fred Komorowski, isn't it?
Yes, Daddy, you know it is.
She's gone home to her little girl.
Oh, we shan't see her then.
No.
Pity.
Yuri smiles affectionately and takes Tonya into his arms. Alexander leans back and puffs on his cigar.
Farewell, the pleasures of the flesh. What I don't understand is how we're going to stay alive this winter.
Daytime. The delegate escorts Yuri to their house.
You have no right whatever to call me from work.
As a Soviet deputy,
That gives you the power, not the right.
It's noticed, you know. Your attitude is noticed.
You should have called the area doctor.
I want this doing quietly.
Why, what is it? Typhus?
Inside, an elderly man lies motionless in bed, his skin white and waxy. Yuri quickly examines his mouth and eyes.
I'll take him away. Get me some transport. It isn't typhus. It's another disease we don't have in Moscow. Starvation.
That seems to give you satisfaction.
Give me satisfaction to hear you admit it.
Would it? Why?
Because it is so.
Your attitude is noticed, you know? Oh, yes, it's been noticed.
Yuri retreats into the Gromyko's apartment.
Yuri!
Hello.
Yuri ruffles his son's hair and walks over to the stove.
The stove's out.
Tonya avoids his questioning gaze.
Tonya? The stove's out! What's the matter with you? No wonder he's losing weight.
Tonya presses her lips together and rushes behind a tattered curtain. Alexander approaches him with a sad smile.
You see, she lets it out as soon as you've gone, and she lights it before you come home.
Yuri's gaze falls. He hurries across the room and opens the curtain to reveal a makeshift kitchen. Tonya kneels on the floor, holding her head and sobbing.
We haven't enough fuel.
Yuri nods and kisses her tenderly. Nighttime. With a quick glance over his shoulder, Yuri breaks a few boards from a fence. Yevgraf Zhivago, wearing a wool cap with a red star on the front, stands in the shadows, watching.
I told myself it was beneath my dignity to arrest a man for pilfering firewood. But nothing ordered by the party is beneath the dignity of any man, and the party was right. One man desperate for a bit of fuel is pathetic. 5 million people desperate for fuel will destroy a city. That was the first time I ever saw my brother. But I knew him, and I knew that I would disobey the party. Perhaps it was the tie of blood between us, but I doubt it. We were only half-tied anyway, and brothers will betray a brother. Indeed, as a policeman, I would say, get hold of a man's brother and you're halfway home. Nor was it admiration for a better man than me. I did admire him, but I didn't think he was a better man. Besides, I've executed better men than me with a small pistol.
Yuri tucks the stolen firewood under his coat and hurries to his house. Yevgrov follows from a discreet distance. At the front door, Yuri stops and turns slowly to face him. Yevgrov stares. Yuri hunches his shoulders, turns away, and opens the door. Inside, the residents gather in the front hall, watching their housemates carry the Gromyko's belongings out of their apartment.
I want this carried out correctly.
What are you doing?
Reallocation of living space, Comrade Doctor.
50 square meters per family of less than 5 persons.
Damn it, whose house is this anyway?
Father, be quiet.
All right, 50 square meters. What are you doing with my things?
They're being stored.
They're being stolen.
Yuri!
Just a minute.
Yuri wrestles his mother's balalaika away from a young man. The stolen firewood falls out of his coat. The delegate picks up a plank.
And where did you get this?
I pulled it out of a fence.
Yevgrov snaps his fingers from the doorway. The residents freeze, then quickly remove their hats and shuffle out of the apartment, bowing respectfully as they pass. Alexander, Yuri, and Tonya stare at him with wide, fearful eyes. As the delegate leaves, Yevgrov gives him a quick, unsmiling nod, then shuts the door behind him.
I told them who I was. The old man was hostile, the girl cautious. My brother seemed very pleased.
Yuri embraces him and kisses both cheeks.
I think the girl was the only one who guessed at their position.
You're just as I imagined you. You're my political conscience.
I asked him, hadn't he one of his own? And so he talked about the revolution.
You lay life on a table and you cut out all the tumors of injustice. Marvelous.
I told him if he felt like that, he should join the party.
Ah, but cutting out the tumors of injustice, that's a deep operation. Someone must keep life alive while you do it, by living. Isn't that right?
I thought then it was wrong. He told me what he thought about the party, and I trembled for him. He approved of us, but for reasons which were subtle, like his verse. Approval such as his could vanish overnight. I told him so.
Well, of course, I can't approve this evening something you may do tomorrow.
He was walking about with a noose round his neck and didn't know. So I told him what I had heard about his poems.
Yuri wears a hurt, troubled frown.
Not liked. Not liked by whom? Why not liked?
So I told him that.
Yuri gazes up at his brother with intense, questioning eyes. He pauses, then bows his head into his hands.
Do you think it's personal, petit bourgeois, and self-indulgent?
Yevgrov nods.
I lied. But he believed me. And it struck me through to see that my opinion mattered. The girl knew what it meant, what it was going to mean. They couldn't survive what was coming in the city. I urged them to leave and live obscurely somewhere in the country where they could keep themselves alive.
We have, used to have, an estate at Varikino, near Yuryatin.
Tonya smiles hopefully at Yuri.
People know us there.
He didn't resist. I offered to obtain permits, passes, warrants, told them what to take and what to leave behind.
Later, Yuri walks his brother to the door.
I had the impertinence to ask him for a volume of his poems. And so we parted. I think I even told him that we would meet again in better times. but perhaps I didn't.
With a faint smile, Yevgrov tucks the book inside his leather coat and starts downstairs. He lingers for a moment and shoots a quick parting glance at his brother. A few of the residents drift back into their apartments, staring cautiously at the policeman. Later, at a train station, giant posters of Lenin hang on the walls. Hundreds of people, including Yuri and his family, lie sleeping on the platform, huddled together for warmth. Yuri's red balalaika is strapped to a leather satchel. With a faint smile, Yuri watches a man across the platform strumming a balalaika. Tonya leans her head against his shoulder, staring blankly across the tracks. Alexander dozes, with Sasha resting against him. Yuri's gaze drifts to the poster of a man standing with his fist in the air. Two soldiers carrying rifles pace back and forth along the edge of the tracks. Down the tracks, headlights loom large as a train arrives. The crowd scrambles to its feet. Yuri picks up Sasha and pushes his way across the platform. Behind him, Alexander and Tonya fight the crush of people as they try to follow him. People dart across the tracks as the train slows. Pushing and shoving, they struggle toward the open doors with their luggage. Yuri shoves his way into a car where a shaggy blonde man watches the turmoil with a bitter scowl. Yuri grabs Sasha and boosts him into a bunk, then spread eagles himself across three other straw-covered platforms. Alexander and Tonya clamber on board and take the bunks reserved by Yuri. Others press into the car. A soldier tries to slide the door shut, then rifle butts hopeful passengers to close the door. Alexander lies down. Pieces of straw shower down from the bunk above.
Charming accommodation.
Charming accommodation. That's very good. I'm an intellectual.
Shut up, you intellectual.
Shut up, you Lexbill.
The soldier scoffs at the blonde man, who catches Yuri's eye and points at a red band tied around his arm.
Forced labor.
The train jerks as its cars attach. The door slides open for a uniformed political officer who climbs on board.
Attention, comrades. Your train will leave tomorrow morning. Health regulations for the journey. Night soil will be emptied every morning without fail. Straw to be replaced at 10-day intervals, the old straw burned. In the event of fresh straw being unavailable, old straw to be turned. This is disinfectant. Use it. And this wagon is a detachment of voluntary labor.
Liar.
The political officer glares at the blonde man. The soldier shrugs.
You are required by the military committee to show them all assistance. One carriage is occupied by sailors of the heroic Kronstadt Sailor Soviet. Are you all being good hands?
They are idiots.
Attention, comrades. In approximately 11 days' time, you'll pass through the Urals province, where White Guard units, aided by foreign interventionists and other criminal reactionary elements, have recently been active. The military committee assures you that the criminals have been completely routed in that area by Red Guard units under the command of People's Commander Strelnikov.
There's the man. Clap him.
The line is definitely clear. Long live the revolution.
Long live anarchy! Lexbitter! Eurocrat!
The soldier handcuffs Kostoyev, the blonde man, to his bunk. Tonya winces sympathetically.
Is that necessary?
Six volunteers are signed for, and six I'll deliver.
I'm a free man. Spitter. There's nothing you can do about it.
The soldier stalks away. The passengers stare at Kostoyev.
I am the only free man on this train. The rest of you are cattle.
He yanks furiously at the chains, then sinks his head into his hands. Daytime. Red flags whipping in the wind. The train hurtles through a snowy forest. Our view reels back and forth as we watch the tracks beneath us. Inside Yuri's train car, we scan the bunks full of sleeping passengers, jostled back and forth with the motion of the train. Yuri and Sasha sleep in a top bunk. Beneath them, Tonya lies with her eyes half closed. Alexander dozes nearby with his hat on. The passengers wear coats and gloves. Several huddle together for warmth. A stove stands in the middle of the car, and pots hang on a wall. Scowling, Kostoyev leans his head on his hand and watches an elderly couple snuggled on the floor. The bearded old man leans over and kisses his wife tenderly on the cheek. She smiles in her sleep and hugs him closer. Still shackled to his bunk, the prisoner's eyes fill with tears. Outside, moonlight turns the icy landscape a pale blue. In the train car, Yuri jolts awake. He peers over the edge of his bunk at the other passengers, then sighs and leans back. Yuri spots a small window in the wall beside him and slides it open. Yuri gazes outside with a dreamy smile. Ghostly white clouds skid across the sky, mingling with the billows of steam rising over the train. Overhead, the full moon glows a clean, bright silver. Below, Kostoyev watches Yuri with an amused smirk. Yuri glances down, then turns back to the window, fixing his gaze on the sky. Another passenger kicks the window shut with his foot. Yuri rolls over with a heavy sigh. Daytime. In the distance, the train rolls across a desolate, snow-covered landscape. Inside, as the other passengers cover their noses with their hands, Kostoyev and another man with a red armband shovel soiled straw into a pile. The soldier motions for Kostoyev to open the door. He tugs on the door handle, while the other man pries it open with a crowbar. The door slides open, revealing a sheet of ice and snow covering the entire opening. Kostoyev's partner picks up a shovel and swings. The passengers grimace against the bitter wind blowing in through the door. Kostoyev and the other man quickly shovel the straw out of the moving train, then slide the door shut. As the two men warm their hands by the stove, Yuri picks up a can and douses the floor with blue disinfectant. Later, a young woman with dark hair dances around the train car, twirling her skirt and clapping her hands. Tonya claps along, beaming happily, then leans back and kisses her father on the cheek. The train suddenly jerks to a slower speed. The young woman loses her balance and falls as a stew sloshes over the top of the stove. The grizzled, burly soldier moves the other passengers away from the door. He leans his ear to the wood, listening, then motions for one of his helpers to slide it open. Others watch with curious frowns. Yuri, Tonya, and Alexander gather with others at the open door and peer outside. A village stands in ruins, the skeletons of houses still smoking from recent fires. Dead livestock litter the snow. A few handfuls of people warm themselves around makeshift fires. As the train rolls slowly past the scene, somber passengers stare out at the decimated village. Snow starts to fall. train rumbles through the station without stopping. A few women villagers dash toward it, waving their arms in a desperate attempt to stop the train. One woman runs alongside Yuri's car, a baby bundled in her arms. She gazes up at the passengers with wide, pleading eyes.
Help me, brothers, for the love of God!
Yuri wipes his hand on his coat, kneels down, and reaches out for the baby. He scoops the bundle into his arms, passes it back into the car, then offers his hand to the woman. Her eyes bulge wildly as she struggles to keep up with the moving train.
Come on!
She stretches out her hand. Yuri grabs it, and she slips. Several other passengers grab hold of the woman's coat and help Yuri haul her into the car. With the woman safely inside, Yuri heaves himself to his feet. Tonya rushes up to him.
Yuri, the child is dead.
Yuri nods wearily. Later, the passengers gather around the woman, who munches on a roll.
It wasn't my child, dear. And his little soul's in heaven now, that's certain.
Who did it, comrade? The whites?
The whites? No. Strelnikov.
Well then, you must have done something.
It wasn't us, comrade. The commander said we sold horses to the whites. It wasn't us, it was those pigs in Kuniko. We told him, but he didn't believe us.
I expect you were lying.
As God's my witness.
But he isn't.
Commander Strelnikov is a great man. He commanded Sasha, and he lives on bread and water.
Does he?
I don't know. They say so.
It's true. No one knows where he comes from. And they never know where he is.
He's back up the line.
Yes? No. Someone's for it. Eh?
Oh, really? Not again. What this time?
The train rolls to a stop as it approaches a blockade that covers the tracks. Inside, Tonya smiles sweetly at her father.
Never mind, Father. Get a good night's sleep.
Alexander stares thoughtfully.
I know what I'm going to do.
Morning. A cross made of sticks marks a tiny, fresh grave. Muddy footprints in the snow lead back to the train, where several passengers warm their hands on the engines. Others stand around, stomping their feet. Tonya, carrying Sasha in her arms, walks along the tracks with Yuri. Yuri points to a distant, snow-capped mountain range.
Look! The Urals.
Look, Sasha, look! That's where we're going, darling. Through the mountains and into the forest. Then it'll be much warmer still.
Will there be wolves in the forest?
Tonya smiles tenderly at her son. In the distance, another train hurtles toward them on a parallel track. Passengers stare at the oncoming train, then move away from the tracks as it approaches. The first of four cars is painted red, and red flags billow atop the caboose. A group of sailors raise their fists in salute as the train streaks past.
Yes, that's Strelnikov.
Pasha stands in back of the train, staring at the crowd with a cold, hard expression. He wears a black leather cap adorned with a red star. His train grows smaller as it heads across the lifeless landscape. Against a pale mosaic, a title reads, Intermission. Title fades to black. Feathery ice crystals cover a window, illuminated by a stream of pale sunlight. The delicate white fronds etch the glass like lacy ferns. Fades to black. The screen remains black. Shaped pinpoint of light appears and grows rapidly larger. We shoot through the opening of a tunnel into a dramatic vista of blue sky and white mountains. On board the train, passengers in Yuri's compartment try to hang on, pitching violently back and forth with the movement of the train. The stove in the center of the car sends up clouds of steam as liquid sloshes over it. In the top bunk, Yuri and Sasha peer out the small window, squinting against the rushing wind. Outside, a towering snow-covered mountain range rises in a rugged silhouette over a tree-filled valley, dazzling against a cloudless blue sky. As they pass through a tunnel, a cloud of black dust blows in. Yuri cradles his arms protectively around Sasha's head. Dawn. The train sits on the tracks in the middle of a thick forest. Yuri slides open his window, peers outside into the mist, then closes it again.
Daddy.
Sasha pokes his head up from his bunk.
What's that noise?
It's only a waterfall.
No, the other noise.
Guns, Sasha.
Are they biting?
They must be. It's a long way away. Let's go to sleep.
Yuri gently strokes Sasha's head. The little boy climbs back into his bed. Yuri leans his head to one side, listening, a faraway look in his eyes. Later, he hikes into the forest. Yuri pauses, then smiles at the sight of sunlight filtering through the trees. With his gaze fixed on the sky, Yuri breaks into a run. He bursts through the trees, straight onto the tracks of Strelnikov's parked train, guarded by sentries. Yuri tries to run. A sentry wearing a red armband tackles him to the ground.
Look,
They pull a pouch from Yuri's coat pocket. The soldier glances quickly at Yuri's travel papers.
Is that all? That's all.
The soldier unrolls a cloth to reveal a set of silverware. He examines a sharp knife.
Bring him.
On board Strelnikov's train, three sentries stand guard as a grim Pasha looks over Yuri's papers. Pasha glances from the papers to Yuri, then lays them aside.
Who sent you here, Zhivago?
No one sent me here, Commander. I'm going to Uryatin with my wife and child. They're on the train from Moscow.
Yes, we've checked that.
Then?
You put your knife with a fork and a spoon, and it looks quite innocuous. Perhaps you travel with a wife and child for the same reason.
No.
Uryatin is occupied by white guards. Is that why you're going there?
No. We're going on to Varikino.
Not through Uryatin. It's under shellfire.
Commander, I'm not a white agent.
No, I don't think you are. All right, Kolya. Thank you, comrade. Sit down, Doctor. Take it. It's not as silly as it seems. There have been one or two attempts.
The sentries leave.
Are you the poet?
Yes.
I used to admire your poetry.
Thank you.
I shouldn't admire it now. I should find it absurdly personal. Don't you agree? Feelings, insights, affections, it's suddenly trivial now. You don't agree. You're wrong. The personal life is dead in Russia. History has killed it. I can see how you might hate me.
I hate everything you say, but not enough to kill you for it.
You have a brother?
Yevgraf?
Yevgraf, yes, the policeman.
I didn't know that.
Perhaps not, a secret policeman. Did he send you here?
Yevgraf? Oh, Yevgraf's a Bolshevik.
Pasha responds with a tight nod.
I don't know anything about these things.
Oh, you know a great deal. When you came in, you recognized me. How? Has someone shown you photographs?
No.
I am certain that you recognized me.
I've seen you before, Commander.
When?
6 years ago.
Go on.
Christmas Eve, you...
You were there? Or has someone told you this?
I attended to the man who was injured by your wife.
Why do you call her my wife?
I met her again. We served together on the Ukrainian front. If she's with you, I'm sure she'll vouch for me.
I haven't seen her since the war. She's in Uryatin.
Zhivago blinks and pinches his brow.
Uryatin?
The private life is dead. For a man with any manhood.
We saw a sample of your manhood on the way, a place called Mink.
They've been selling horses to the whites.
No. It seems you burnt the wrong village.
They always say that, and what does it matter? A village betrays us, a village is burnt, the point's made.
Your point, their village.
Kolya!
Pasha leaps to his feet. The soldier returns. Pasha shoves Yuri's papers across the desk.
And what will you do with your wife and child in Varikin?
Just live.
Take him away. He's innocent.
Yuri leaves. The soldier leads him away from the train, back into the woods.
You're lucky.
Pasha stands at a window of his train, watching Yuri with a bitter scowl. Yuri and the soldier reach the other side of the woods, where Yuri's train stands ready to leave. Passengers wave furiously at Yuri, urging him to hurry. He sprints to his compartment. Tonya and Alexander help him in. Tonya throws her arms around her husband.
We've been diverted. Do you know where we're going?
Yes. Varikino halt.
Later, Yuri and his family disembark from the train. As Yuri watches the train pull away from the deserted platform, Tonya gazes at the gentle landscape. Alexander heads for the station. As Alexander disappears into the quaint building, Tonya spots a small, well-tended flower garden that decorates the platform. She turns to Yuri.
How lovely.
She runs into Yuri's arms.
Oh, how lovely.
Hello? Hello?
A bearded, elderly man rushes toward Alexander, hurriedly buttoning his station master's uniform.
Alexander Maximilovich?
Yes. It's me, Petya.
Petya bows.
Now.
That's all done with, you know.
Alexander helps him to rise.
How did we get to the house, Petya?
As you always did, Your Honor.
Now, a horse-drawn carriage rolls down a winding dirt road that overlooks a lush valley on one side and a shoreline on the other. Petya sits in the driver's seat while Yuri and his family ride in back. A pony trots behind the carriage. They roll to a stop. Yuri points to the horizon.
Look, Sasha.
In the distance, black smoke billows into the sky.
What is it, Petya? Forest fire?
Forest fire, Your Honor. That's Yuri Atlan. Poor souls. First the reds, then the whites. Now the reds again. And that's still only cough. His heart must be dead.
Hey. We'll soon be there now, Sasha.
Another 5 miles.
Isn't that far? Ah, one forgets. How is the place?
Oh, well enough, Your Honor. It's all locked up, you know?
Later, with the pony trotting alongside, the carriage rolls along a dirt path that leads to a distant estate, the only buildings visible on the grassy plain. Wearing a bright, happy smile, Tonya holds her son up for a better look.
Varekino.
Alexander grins at his daughter and grandson. As they draw closer, we see the estate surrounded by fresh spring grass and overgrown trees. Petya drives the carriage toward the elegant mansion, which has several onion-shaped domes rising from the pitched roof, 3 domed turrets, and a wraparound porch. A dilapidated cottage sits to one side of the property. With the pony frolicking around the carriage, it rolls to a stop in front of the house. Alexander stands, removes his hat, and stares soberly at the mansion. Weeds and dried leaves clutter the porch. Wooden planks are nailed over the door. Alexander climbs down from the carriage, approaches the door, then turns to Petya, stunned.
All locked up, you see.
Alexander puts on his glasses and reads a tattered sign nailed to the barricade.
A body, styling itself. The Yuri Atin Committee of Revolutionary Justice has expropriated my house in the name of the people. Very well. I'm one of the people, too!
Bristling with anger, he picks up a spade.
Don't, Your Honor, they'd call a counter-revolution.
Get out of my way!
Father, don't. Petya brought us here. That makes him a counter-revolutionary, too. They shoot counter-revolutionaries.
Alexander yanks the spade out of Yuri's restraining grasp and stalks away. He hurls the shovel across the yard.
It's not the reds in the town, it's the reds in the forest. Partisans.
Here?
Who knows, Your Honor? They go where they want and they do what they want.
All we need is a roof, Petya.
And a bit of garden. Is there nowhere?
Petya glances at the dilapidated cottage.
They didn't lock the cottage.
Now, Alexander pushes open the door of the rustic cottage. Dust and dirt swirl through the air. Carrying their luggage, the others file in behind him.
Oh, yes, we can manage here.
The stove works. I'll find you a few sticks of furniture.
And some sweet potatoes?
I'm afraid the garden is dreadfully run back.
Petra yanks open a back door. Yuri steps out eagerly into the dry, overgrown garden. He takes a deep breath, then smiles gratefully at the elderly man.
Yes, thank you.
They turn to look up at the roof, where curls of smoke billow out from the stone chimney. The scene dissolves to autumn, with leaves blowing over the now lush garden. Sasha runs off to play, while Yuri fills a basket and lugs it into the cottage. Inside, Tonya and Alexander sort piles of potatoes.
Well done, my boy. I must say, scratch a Russian, you'll find a peasant. I've always said so.
Well, you're wrong. He works like a peasant, but he isn't a peasant.
Oh, I don't mind, Tonya. Really, it's a good life.
It certainly is. I wouldn't be surprised if you two didn't look back on this time as one of your best. Awfully glad about the expected new arrival, Yuri. Anna was born here, you know.
Oh, no, I didn't know that. Oh, I'm terribly glad.
Aha! Here's Wigged Mercury.
Petya approaches, carrying a bag.
Looks a bit down in the mouth. Petya? What news from Yuri Atin?
No lard, no sugar. Oil next week, perhaps. Ah, flour, salt, coffee, and nails.
Petya avoids Alexander's questioning gaze.
Bad news? Oh, Lord, not another purge.
No. Strelnikov's gone.
Well, that's not bad news.
No, he's in Manchuria, they say.
He hesitates, then reluctantly hands Alexander a newspaper.
That's the news.
Alexander takes it. Petya tips his cap and hurries out. Tonya and Yuri exchange a quick, worried look. Alexander carefully puts on his reading glasses and unfolds the newspaper. As he reads, his shoulders droop sadly.
They've shot the Tsar. And all his family.
He rips off his glasses.
Oh, that's a savage deed. What's it for?
Just to show there's no going back.
Winter. Massive snowdrifts engulf the small cottage. Inside, Alexander sits by the stove while Sasha helps Tonya with her ironing. Alexander turns to watch Yuri, who stands at a frost-crusted window. Yuri breathes steam onto the glass and clears a small circle with his fingers. Outside, lead-gray clouds hover over the desolate winter landscape. Yuri presses his lips together and bows his head. He turns and spots an empty writing pad on a small table. Rubbing his hands together, he takes a seat and picks up a pen. Yuri stares off into space, then looks over at Tonya, who stands over an ironing board. Her pregnant stomach bulges beneath her flowered apron. Yuri gazes distantly as he twirls the pen.
Yuri, why don't you go to Yuri Atin?
Yes, why don't you, my boy? It'll do you good.
Why, what's in Yuri Atin?
It is in Petersburg.
Very decent little library. If it's still there.
I wish you would.
No, I don't think so. Anyway, the roads are blocked.
Yuri stands up and returns to his vigil by the window. With a wondering smile, he notices the feathery ice crystals covering the glass. He traces the delicate lacy white fronds with his finger. Outside, a veil of sunlight lifts the darkness and beams through the window. Dissolves to a field of bright yellow daffodils, their bell-shaped blooms waving in a gentle breeze. Yuri wanders through the flowers, gazing at the lush greenery with a serene smile. Wearing a white belted tunic, Yuri gazes up at the trees. New leaves cling to their branches, rustling in the wind. A breeze tugs at Yuri's dark hair as he scans the flowering yard. His smile deepens as he fixes his gaze on a pair of yellow daffodils. As our view descends into the bright yellow heart of one flower, the scene dissolves to Lara, who sits behind a desk in a small shabby library. With her blonde hair swept into a simple, elegant bun, Lara stares as Yuri walks into the library. Her blue eyes brim with tears. Yuri stops to sign in with a librarian, then walks into the room. Lara swallows hard and bows her head. She hesitates, then raises it again. Yuri stands at the top of a set of steps, gazing down at her. With his jaw slack and his eyes locked on hers, Yuri walks down the steps to stand in front of her desk.
Chicago. Yes. How are you?
What are you doing here?
We're at Varikino.
Yuri grins and takes her hand. Later, they walk outside.
Why Varikino?
Why not? We had to go somewhere.
But here? I came here to find my husband, one who was reported killed.
Strelnikov. I met him.
Met him?
Yes.
A slight wind sends leaves billowing around their feet as they walk down the street past a few burned-out building ruins. Talking, they sit on a bench in a deserted park. Eventually, they stand up and walk away, arm in arm. Later, Lara holds Yuri's arm as they stroll leisurely along an alley, smiling and laughing. They walk toward a modest, weathered house. Our view glides up to the window of an apartment on the second floor. A neat row of flowers grows in a window box. Later, Lara leads Yuri into her apartment. She carefully hangs the key on the wall and shuts the door behind them. Smiling appreciatively, Yuri wanders around the warm, modest rooms. Lara watches him with a soft, tender expression. Sunlight peeks in through lace curtains. Plants and flowers decorate the windowsills. Gleaming pots and pans rest on a stone hearth. A vase of yellow sunflowers glows in a corner.
How long have you been living here?
About a year.
Yuri gazes intensely into Lara's eyes. He takes her in his arms. Lara holds him tightly, burying her head against his shoulder. They draw apart slightly and gaze at each other, their faces inches apart. Suddenly, Yuri embraces her in a forceful, passionate kiss. Later, a pale afternoon sun filters through the curtained windows of the living room. Through a doorway, we see into part of a bedroom where the sheets begin to move. Yuri and Lara lie in bed, with Lara's head nestled on his shoulder. Yuri stares ahead with a troubled, distracted frown.
Is Tonya with you?
All of us.
Sasha.
Yuri squeezes his eyes shut and looks away. Lara wraps her arms tightly around his neck and draws him closer, sadly nuzzling his cheek. Yuri turns his head. He kisses Lara, first tenderly, then passionately. the cottage. Yuri lies next to Tonya in bed, staring at the ceiling with a troubled frown. He glances over at his wife, who sleeps peacefully beside him, then carefully climbs out from under the fur covers. Pacing restlessly, he wanders over to the window and stares thoughtfully at the floor. Outside, a pale then leans despondently against the glass and bows his head.
Yuri?
Behind him, Tonya sits up.
It's awfully early, isn't it?
6:30.
What are you doing?
Nothing. Couldn't sleep.
Is anything the matter?
No.
Smiling, Tonya climbs out of bed and wraps a shawl around her shoulders.
Shall I get some tea?
Yuri smiles and kisses her forehead.
Yes, do.
She kisses him on the cheek and walks away. Yuri's cheerful smile fades into a dark, brooding gaze. He turns back to the window and stares outside. Later, Yuri rides a horse away from Varikino. Later, Yuri strides down an alley leading to Lara's house. He walks into the doorless foyer, then removes a loose brick from the wall and pulls out a hidden key. Smiling, he replaces the brick and climbs up the dusty, neglected stairs to Lara's apartment. He lets himself in. Inside the sunny apartment, he hangs the key on its hook and wanders into the living room. He smiles at the dining table where a vase of fresh flowers sits among three place settings. He glances into the bedroom, then bows his head. Yuri turns and smiles as he watches a young girl step into the apartment.
Hello. You are silly. We called and called.
Did you? I didn't hear.
Well, we did.
Yuri smiles at Lara over Katya's head.
Hello, Lara.
Hello.
How's Olya Petrovna?
She gets worse and worse. She gave us CI and arithmetic all morning.
CI?
Civic instruction.
Look.
Sitting in Yuri's lap, Katya pulls out a drawing.
That's very good, Katya.
Thank you. It's the Tsar.
Oh.
The Tsar's an enemy of the people.
Well, he didn't know he was an enemy of the people, you know.
Well, he should have known, shouldn't he?
Yes, he should.
Fancy not knowing CI, doesn't your little boy go to school?
Lunch.
Good.
Come on, you.
Later at Varikino, now heavily pregnant, Tonya wanders through the garden. She stoops to pick a handful of fresh herbs, then holds them to her nose and inhales deeply. Yuri watches her through the window, smiling. As she starts back toward the cottage, Yuri comes out to meet her. Tonya returns his smile and offers him the herbs.
Smell. What? Oh. Oh, this one's a prize fight. Yuri.
She places his hand on her stomach.
Wait a minute. There.
Tonya reaches up and places an impulsive kiss on his cheek, then continues inside. Yuri sighs and follows her with a purposeful stride. He pauses awkwardly in the doorway. Tonya sits at the table preparing a meal. She looks up with a questioning smile.
I'm going into your yatin, darling.
What, now?
Yes, I want to get some morphine, disinfectant.
I shan't need morphine.
But you never know.
Well, I shan't need it today.
No, but it's pretty close. I haven't realized.
He grabs his coat and hurries out.
You'll be back before it's dark.
Yuri jumps on his horse and gallops away. Later, in her apartment, Lara gazes up at Yuri with tear-stained cheeks.
Yes, yes, my darling, do what's best.
I am not coming back.
I understand.
But never, Lara. You understand?
She nods.
Do you believe me?
She hesitates, then reluctantly shakes her head. Trembling, Yuri stalks out, leaving Lara with her head in her hands. Later, Yuri aimlessly rides his horse along a dirt road in the woods. He slows to a stop, his head hung despondently. Yuri looks up quickly. Several riders gallop out of the woods, coming toward him from either side of the forest. The riders surround Yuri and force him off the road and into the forest. One horseman rides in front of Yuri, carrying the reins of Yuri's horse. Yuri's hat remains behind on the dusty road. His eyes wide with fear, Yuri hangs onto his saddle as they maneuver through the trees. The group comes to a stop in front of a Bolshevik soldier.
Comrade Doctor, I need a medical officer.
Sorry, I have a wife and child in Varikino.
And a mistress in Yuriat. Comrade Medical Officer, we are Red Partisans. And we shoot deserters.
Carrying red flags, the Red Partisans fall in behind their leader. With Yuri in their midst, Yuri's kidnappers lead him into the troop. Yuri glances around frantically as he's led away. The soldiers ride down a steep hillside further into the forest. Their drab green and gray clothing blends with the natural landscape. Our view glides up to the horizon. The woods stretch out for miles in a dense carpet of green. Mountains loom in the distance. Later, Yuri approaches the leaders, Razin and Liberius.
Where are you taking me?
To the front.
And where is the front?
Good question, Doctor. The front is wherever there are enemies of the revolution. Wherever there is one gang of white guards, one battalion of foreign interventionists, that is the front. And wherever there is one resentful bourgeois, one unreliable schoolmaster, one dubious poet hugging his private life, that too is the front.
And how long are you going to keep me?
For as long as we need you.
Winter. We look down at a vast snow-covered landscape. Below, a frozen lake is covered by a seamless blanket of white. Our view drifts down to the forest below, then dissolves to a grove of tall, slender trees. The Red Partisans sit on their horses, waiting. Liberia sits motionless at the front of the troop, staring intently at the frozen lake and the opposite shore. Without breaking his gaze, Liberia raises a saber over his head and holds it there. Suddenly, he drops his arm with a vicious chop.
Now!
The men surge forward onto the ice. Brilliant gunfire flashes on the opposite shore. Several soldiers fall off their horses and crumple onto the ice. Back on shore, Yuri sits with Razin, watching the massacre with weary eyes. Springtime. Through a grove of pine trees, we scan a vast yellow cornfield that stretches toward the horizon. The Red Partisans crouch behind a stone wall, machine guns and rifles pointed at the corn. Liberius peers through a pair of binoculars. In the distance, figures dressed in white leap up from their hiding places and attempt to run. The gunfire mows them down.
Well, that was easy. Come on, Doctor, let's see what we've done.
Cradling their guns, the Red Partisans wade through the waist-high corn stalks, cautiously scanning the horizon. Liberius tramps forward with an impatient frown, then comes to his first pair of victims, fresh-faced young boys wearing crisp military uniforms. The men spread out and search for more bodies, which lie motionless where they fell. Yuri spots one young man trying to escape the men by crawling away on his belly. He and Liberius rush to his side. They turn him over gently. Blood covers his white tunic. Liberius reads an insignia on the boy's uniform.
St. Michael's Military School.
He spots the body of an old man, a sword still clutched in his hand.
You old bastard!
The boy goes limp. Razian watches with a cold, unsympathetic frown.
It doesn't matter.
Yuri glares at him.
Did you ever love a woman, Razian?
I once had a wife and four children.
Razian walks away, leaving Yuri kneeling beside the boy. Now the soldiers march across a frozen lake. Now at a meeting.
He has been a good comrade.
He's been a good medical officer.
We took him from his wife. We took him from his child.
None of this matters.
What does matter, Comrade Commissar? Tell me, I've forgotten.
This is contemptible. The doctor stays.
I command this unit.
We command jointly. The party bulletin expressly states...
I could have you taken out and shot.
And could you have the party taken out and shot? Try to understand. As the military struggle nears its close, the political struggle intensifies. In the hour of victory, the military will have served its purpose. All men will then be judged politically, regardless of their military record. Meanwhile, there are still white units in this area. The doctor stays. That concludes the meeting.
Yuri hangs his head. Now, from high above a frozen lake, we see a dark speck moving slowly across the ice, carving a thin line in the snow. On the frozen surface, the partisans trudge forward wearily, walking in a ragged column. Their red flag flutters in the wind, badly torn and soiled. Razian rides at the front of the procession. A soldier leads his horse by the reins. He frowns when he spots a dozen women and children wandering toward them. With his mouth and neck buried in the collar of his coat, Yuri watches them approach with glistening eyes. Razin dismounts and approaches one young woman, staggering forward with blue lips and wide eyes.
Comrade, where are you going? Are you running away, comrade?
Soldiers.
Red soldiers or white soldiers?
Soldiers.
She gestures vaguely in the distance. Razin gives up and returns to his horse. The partisans keep moving. Yuri remains hunched and motionless. He glances up at the sky. The sun breaks through the heavy clouds and glows brightly overhead. Yuri turns his gaze back to the troops who trudge on ahead of him. As the remaining stragglers move on, the refugees shuffle past him in the opposite direction. Finally, Yuri turns his horse and rides off on his own. Leaving a lonely trail of footprints, Yuri becomes a dark speck on the lake. Now on foot in a raging snowstorm, Yuri stumbles through knee-deep drifts. He follows a line of telegraph poles, the only indication of a road. Later, wrapped in a tattered blanket and with ice crusting his clothes and hair, Yuri sees two adults and a child in the distance ahead of him. He squints. An image appears of Tonya plodding through the snow, a scarf wrapped around her head.
Tonya? Tonya! Sasha!
The three people start to run. Yuri chases them.
Tonya! 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 Hey!
The three people duck into a tiny wood shelter.
Tonya! Tonya!
Yuri stumbles after them. When he reaches the shelter, a man pulls out a dagger and waves it threateningly. Yuri stares at the three strangers in confusion, then backs away. He continues walking. Later, covered in snow, Yuri plods along a train track, his eyes half closed. Yuri blinks and looks up. Yuri dives to one side just as the train passes. Yuri heaves himself to his feet. Dazed, he turns around in a circle and sees that he's at a train station. He approaches an armed soldier.
This is Yuryatin.
Yes, Yuryatin.
What happened at Varikino?
Moscow folks?
Yes.
They've gone away. Gone away. There's nobody at Varikino.
Yuri's pale, frost-covered face crumbles into lines of despair. Later, limping and hunched over, he trudges toward the entrance of Lara's apartment house. Yuri freezes at the sight of several rats scurrying down the stairs. He shuffles forward a few steps, then sags against the railing and begins to sob. Yuri removes the loose brick from the wall. He finds the key and a note. Hands trembling, he begins to read.
Lord, what happiness! They say you're alive. Someone saw you near the town. I take it you've gone to Varikino, so I'm going there myself with Katya. But just in case, I've left a little food, boiled potatoes mostly. Put the lid back on the pan or the rats will get it. I'm mad with joy.
Yuri crumples the note to his chest and throws his head back, smiling, as tears run down his cheeks. Now he walks into Lara's apartment. He gazes around the cozily furnished room with a grateful smile and removes his frost-encrusted hat. He beams at the sight of a porcelain bowl and saucer laid neatly on the cloth-covered table. Turning stiffly, Yuri hangs the key in its usual place, then limps toward the whitewashed bedroom. Supporting himself against the door jamb, he gazes down at the neatly made iron bed. Yuri shuffles to Lara's bureau and catches his reflection in the mirror. He recoils at the sight of his watery, bloodshot eyes and the dark, bruise-like circles beneath them, his gray, pasty skin and his shaggy, matted hair. Yuri pulls off his gloves and claws at the ice crusting his beard. Staring at himself, he collapses against the bureau. His eyes widen as he sees an image of three figures running through the snow.
Tonya! Tonya!
Yuri.
Tonya!
Yuri.
Tonya.
Yuri, darling.
The image fades. Now, lying in bed, he sees Lara standing above him, smiling tenderly. He reaches up to touch her face, then lets his arm fall back onto his chest.
It's all right, Yuri. They're safe. They're in Moscow.
In Moscow?
Yes.
Tonya.
All of them. They're safe.
Safe. Firing squad.
Shh.
Lara strokes Yuri's shoulder reassuringly and goes to the window. She peers outside, then draws the curtains shut. At the end of the alley, a lone figure stands among the snowdrifts, watching her apartment. A match flares as he lights a cigarette, the only spark of color in the shadowy alley. Daytime. Lara scrubs the table, while Yuri, now clean-shaven, paces back and forth with a painful hobble.
Better.
Yuri sits down and takes Lara by the hand. As he draws her into his arms, Lara gazes down at him with a troubled frown.
What?
I've got a letter for you. I've had it 3 months. And it was 3 months getting here. It's from Moscow. I think it's from Tonya. It's addressed to you, care of me.
Yuri stares at her.
She came into Yuriatin to find you when you vanished. Someone sent her here.
You met?
Lara nods tightly.
She's very fine.
Lara moves away from Yuri, allowing him to read in privacy.
My dearest dear, I'm sending this to Larissa Antipovas. Because if you are alive, which God grant, I think that is where you will go. We have a little daughter, Yuri. Did you know? Her name is Anna. Father sends greetings. Sasha has grown quite a lot. He's quite big now. Whenever we speak of you, he weeps and won't be comforted. This is what I have to tell you. We are being deported from Russia. We can't make out if you would be allowed to join us. An organization in Paris, which I mustn't name, will know where we are. But nothing is certain, and there is very little time. I'm writing this in haste. They are coming for us now. God bless you. I must honestly admit that Antipova is a good person.
Yuri winces painfully and leans his head on his bandaged hand. Lara approaches him with hesitant steps.
Yuri, when they got away to Moscow, she left something here.
Lara draws aside a curtain, revealing Yuri's balalaika. Yuri stares at it dully. Nighttime. A man wearing a fur coat hunches his shoulders against the swirling snow and stalks toward Lara's apartment. Upstairs, Lara glances out her window and sees him heading toward the entrance of her building. The man pauses for a moment, peers up at her from under his hood, and keeps walking. Panicked, she turns to Yuri, who stands at the stove stoking the fire.
Yuri!
The figure trudges up the steps. Lara opens the door, then backs away as the man bursts in. He removes his hood. It's Komarovsky. Standing with her arm through Yuri's, Lara stares at him in alarm.
May I come in? Yuri Andreevich, you've changed, I think. Oh, yes, decidedly. Larissa. Remarkably the same.
Komarovsky checks his reflection in a mirror.
I came from Moscow. I'm on the way to Vladivostok.
He takes off his coat and collapses onto a chaise lounge.
I'm here to offer you my help.
I don't want it.
Speak for yourself.
You don't want it.
Yuri Andreevich, you spent 2 years with the Partisans, 5th Division. You have no discharge, so you are a deserter. Your family in Paris is involved in a dangerous immigré organization. Now, all these are technicalities. But your style of life, everything you say and think, your published writings are all flagrantly subversive. Your days are numbered. Unless I help you. Do you want my help?
No.
Wait, Yuri.
Komarovsky pulls a liquor bottle out of his pocket.
Larissa, three glasses.
No.
Yuri, you must see how serious this is.
Please don't underestimate me. Practically or morally, I'm not the man you take me for.
Lara brings the glasses.
How do you know all this about Yuri? How can you help?
I do and I can. Isn't that sufficient?
No.
He hands her a drink.
Santé, Larissa.
She glares at Komarovsky and returns to Yuri's side. Komarovsky gulps down both his drink and hers.
Our eastern seaboard is an undeveloped area. The Commissariat of Foreign Affairs wants to establish an independent state there. It affords us a temporary channel of communication with the outside world. I have good contacts in the Far East. I've been appointed the Minister of Justice.
The Bolsheviks trust you.
They trust no one. They found me useful.
He finishes Yuri's drink.
Here's how I can help you. You come with me as far as the Pacific coast, and from there you can go where you like. To Paris or Nantes.
I think you'd better go.
Your rarefied selfishness is intolerable. Larissa is in danger too.
By association with me?
No, not by association with you. You're a small fry. By association with Strelnikov.
I've never met Strelnikov.
You're married to Strelnikov. They know that.
I was married to Pasha Antipov.
I understand. But they don't. You're being watched. Do you know why? A husband is a sticky commodity, my dear.
Go away.
It's more of your high-minded lunacy. You have a child to think of. Look here.
He pulls a package from his pocket.
That's sugar for the child.
I don't want it.
You'd have refused my sugar. Who are you to refuse me anything? Now you go.
Yuri drags him to the door.
I can't go! Go! I came to you in good faith.
Yuri shoves him down the stairs.
You stay here then. And get your distance! Your distance, do you hear me? You think you're a Magdalene?
Komarovsky tumbles drunkenly to the bottom of the stairs.
You're not a Magdalene! I know you! Do you hear me? We're all made of the same clay, you know? Clay! Clay!
Later, in bed, Lara lies with her back to Yuri.
Lara.
Hmm?
It's rubbish, Lara.
Yes, rubbish. It never happened.
Does it matter?
Doesn't it?
Not to me.
She rolls over to face him, then buries her face on his shoulder. He hugs her tightly.
What shall we do? Can we get on a train?
No, they'd arrest us on the spot.
I don't want to stay here and wait. Varikino.
They'd find out sooner or later.
Yes, but later. And if our days are really numbered, Yuri.
Yes. We'd better leave them. Before we're parted.
Yes.
Riding in a horse-drawn sleigh, Yuri, Lara, and Katya head toward Varikino.
Oh!
sleigh careens over a bump in the road. Bundled in a fur coat and hat, Lara hugs Katya with a happy smile. The black, gleaming horse prances lightly through the snow and comes to a stop in front of the mansion. Lara and Yuri gaze at the house in dismay. Giant snowdrifts pile as high as the roof, obscuring the onion domes. Katya hops out of the carriage. Inside the house, we see Yuri's shadow through the front door. Snow and frost covers everything inside in a thick layer of white, the floors, walls, furniture, and chandeliers. Yuri breaks open the door. He and Lara step inside and scan their white surroundings while Katya plays outside.
Ho, ho, ho! I love the snow! 1, 2, 3!
Now, Yuri and Lara stroll arm in arm through the house, which resembles an ornate ice palace. On the second floor, they arrive at a frosted glass door and walk inside. A rocking horse sits beside another door. They open it to reveal a spacious, elegant library. Yuri takes off his hat and gazes around the room with an eager smile. Dust covers the furniture, walls, and curtains instead of snow. Lara watches as Yuri approaches a desk covered with a thick layer of dust. Yuri wipes off a corner of the desk, revealing rich, gleaming wood underneath. He smiles to himself, then carefully slides open one of the drawers. Inside, piles of stationery lie stacked neatly beside an inkwell and a pen. Yuri turns to Lara, who watches him with a tender smile.
Anna told me to write at this desk.
Nighttime. In the library's anteroom, Katya sleeps bundled up in blankets beside a wood stove. Nearby, Yuri and Lara lie on the floor beneath a fur blanket. Lara sleeps as Yuri stares thoughtfully. His gaze drifts over to the desk in the next room, silhouetted against pale moonlight filtering in through a window. He turns to glance at Lara, then smiles. Now, wearing his coat and a pair of fingerless gloves, Yuri carries a candle over to the desk, now clean and polished. With an eager smile, he sits down and opens the drawer. He pulls out a stack of paper and the inkwell, then checks the tip of a fountain pen. With a smile of satisfaction, he dips the pen into the ink and begins to write, carefully inscribing a title in elegant Cyrillic script. Behind him, Lara remains asleep. Yuri continues writing, then pauses. Yuri grows tense, his eyes wide. Tugging his collar around his neck, he steps out onto the porch and scans the frozen landscape surrounding the house. Moonlight gleams on the frozen snow, casting an eerie blue light onto the climbing vines overtaking the porch. Yuri peers at the cottage across the yard. Yuri paces along the porch, past a carved statue, then freezes. In the distance, a pack of wolves gathers in a grove of trees. With a sudden gesture, Yuri flings out his arms. The startled wolves lope away. Yuri sighs. Behind him, the flickering candle glows warmly through the ice-crusted window. Yuri turns and goes back inside. Yuri settles back into his chair, blows on his hands, and resumes writing. From the anteroom, Lara watches Yuri for a moment, then turns her head and goes back to sleep. Morning. Lara approaches the desk. A single sheet of verse rests among a pile of torn and crumpled drafts. Lara picks it up and begins to read. She sinks into the chair as she reads. Yuri comes to stand beside her. She holds up a hand, gesturing for him to wait.
This isn't me, Yuri.
Yes, it is.
No. It's you.
Yuri points to the title.
Lara.
Nighttime. Through the darkness, we see the mansion almost buried in snow. Inside, Yuri sits at the desk, writing eagerly. A growing stack of pages sits beside him. Yuri crosses out a line, pauses, and rewrites it. He reads to himself, smiles, then continues to compose. Yuri crumples the entire page and tosses it aside. He stares down at a blank sheet, deep in thought. Then, with an eager smile, he picks up his pen.
Yuri! Yuri, there's a wolf howling!
Oh, yes, I've... I've seen them. They're frightened. They won't harm us.
Yes. Oh, no. I'm sorry. It's...
She starts back to bed.
Oh, Lord, this is an awful time to be alive.
No.
It is. It is.
No, no.
Yuri kisses her, reassuringly at first, then with intense passion. Outside, moonlight bounces off the ice, glazing the branches of an ornamental tree. Inside, Yuri lays Lara down on a blanket. He pulls it over both of them, kissing her tenderly as he wipes the tears from her cheeks. Lara gazes up into his eyes, then covers his face and mouth with eager kisses. Yuri takes her in his arms in a feverish embrace. The scene fades to black. Daytime. Wearing somber expressions, Yuri and Lara watch Katya playing with a rocking horse.
Wouldn't it have been lovely if we'd met before?
Before we did. Yes.
We'd have got married and had a house and children. If we'd had children, Yuri, would you like a boy or a girl?
I think we may go mad if we think about all that.
I shall always think about it. Will you write today?
No, not today.
Lara places her hand on his knee. Yuri leans his head back against the chair and covers Lara's hand with his own. Katya moves toward the door.
Katya! Come to me, darling.
Lara hurries to retrieve Katya. She leads her daughter back to the library to stand next to Yuri. Two armed soldiers enter the room, followed by Komarovsky.
Victor! We thought it was...
quiet.
I wonder if you'd mind, comrades?
The sentries leave the room.
There's a train belonging to my government standing in Uriatin. There's a carriage for myself and my assistants. You would travel in comfort and safety.
There's no question. I'm not going with you.
I'm not going without you. So there's an end to it.
Well, then I'll have to speak to Yuri Andreevich in private.
Yuri nods. With a quick, reassuring glance at Lara, he follows Komarovsky out of the room. Lara sinks into a chair, holding Katya tightly in her lap. The two men step out into the hallway.
Strelnikov is dead.
What?
Spare me your expressions of regret. He was a murderous neurotic and no loss to anyone. Do you see how this affects Larissa? It doesn't. You're a fool.
He glances at the guards, then leads Yuri out of earshot.
She's Strelnikov's wife. Why do you think they haven't arrested her? Is this the usual practice? Why do you think they had her watched at Uriatin? They were waiting for Strelnikov.
They thought that Strelnikov would come running to his wife. They didn't know him.
They knew him well enough. He was only 5 miles from here when they caught him. He was arrested on the open road. He didn't conceal his identity. Indeed, throughout the entire interview, he insisted they call him Pavel Antipov, which is his right name, and refused to answer to the name of Strelnikov. On his way to execution, he took a pistol from one of the guards and blew his own brains out.
Oh, my God. Don't tell Lara this.
I think I know Lara at least as well as you. But don't you see her position? She served her purpose. These men that came with me today as an escort will come for her and the child tomorrow as a firing squad. Now, I know exactly what you think of me and why. But if you're not coming with me, she's not coming with me. So are you coming with me? Do you accept the protection of this ignoble Caliban on any terms that Caliban cares to make? Or is your delicacy so exorbitant that you would sacrifice a woman and a child to it?
Yuri returns Komarovsky's challenging sneer with a dark, troubled stare. Later, Komarovsky leads them to his waiting carriage.
There are some bags to carry, comrades.
Komarovsky helps Katya into his sleigh. Yuri and Lara walk slowly down the front stairs, carrying their luggage. Lara stares at the ground with a troubled frown as Yuri loads her bags onto the sleigh. Komarovsky stalks past.
Get in.
Lara doesn't move. Yuri places his hands gently on her shoulders.
Come.
Lara reluctantly climbs into the sleigh.
How many?
All of us.
Sorry, not enough room.
Comrades, there's got to be room.
It's all right. I have to bring our sledge.
Hurry, this train can't wait. There are important people on it.
You start. I'll catch you up.
Lara searches Yuri's face with haunted eyes. He smiles and places his balalaika in her lap.
Right, comrades!
We'll see you at...
Hurry!
The sleigh pulls away, led by the soldiers riding on horseback. Lara cranes her neck, trying not to lose sight of Yuri. As they round a corner, she waves. Yuri raises his hand and waves back, trembling and tearful. Yuri turns and glances up at the house, then sprints up the stairs, leaving his luggage sitting on the ground. Inside, he slips and stumbles on the ice as he dashes through the hallways and into a snow-crusted bedroom. Yuri scratches desperately at the frozen window, then aims a curtain rod at the glass. Panting, Yuri leans out the window and strains for a last glimpse of the carriage, a tiny smudge on the bleak horizon that gradually disappears. As Yuri bows his head, a shard of glass falls. Nighttime, at a train station. Komarovsky opens a train window and scans the platform. Lara sits inside a plushly upholstered private compartment, cradling the balalaika in her lap. Katya lies on the seat beside her, sleeping. Komarovsky returns to the compartment and closes the door behind him.
Well, I'm afraid that's it, my dear. Your young man's not coming.
You fool. Did you really think he would come with you?
As the train starts to move, Lara jumps, then lets her gaze fall to the floor.
The man's an idiot. From Mongolia, he could have gone to China. From China...
You'll never leave Russia.
And let him stay. You've come with me, haven't you?
Yes.
To be sure, it was your duty as a mother.
That's right, Victor. I'm carrying Yuri's child.
Now in the office at the dam.
I was born out there, in the Far East somewhere. I think it was Mongolia. I don't remember.
You were born in Mongolia, and you were born that very year.
So were a lot of other children, Comrade General.
Not many called Tonya, bearing the name Komarov or Komarovsky.
Komarov's a common name, so is Tonya.
With fair hair and blue eyes, lost at the age of 8 when the Civil War broke out in the Far East. There's something you haven't told me, Tonya. How did you come to be lost?
I can't remember.
I don't believe that. You must remember something.
No.
Tell you how I first met your mother.
If she was my mother, Comrade General.
You judge. I picked my brother up, literally picked him up on a Moscow street. He had a fourth-class ration book and he was undernourished. He didn't seem to mind that or anything. I thought he was a happier man than me. He suffered me to buy him a new suit and to get him a job at his old hospital. I saw him off for his first day's work. This was 8 years after he and Lara parted.
So he never saw her again?
Now a frail, gray-haired Yuri hugs his brother.
Thank you. You've been very kind to me.
Yevgraf helps Yuri into a streetcar, waves soberly as it pulls away. Yuri leans out of the door and waves back.
He must have known how ill he was. The walls of his heart were like paper. But he kept it to himself. He kept a lot to himself.
Staring distractedly out the window, Yuri sees a blonde woman walking down the sidewalk. As the train nears her, Yuri's mouth drops open. It's Lara, wearing a drab brown coat and a gray scarf tied around her hair. Yuri jumps to his feet and tries to push his way off the train.
Please.
Unable to maneuver through the crowded aisle, Yuri drops back into his seat. He trembles as the train rumbles past Lara, who walks just a few feet away from him. Yuri tries in vain to open his window, then pounds desperately on it to get her attention. Yuri gasps and tugs at his collar. He stands up and stumbles down the aisle, shoving his way past the other passengers. His left arm dangling stiffly, Yuri limps off the train just behind Lara, who doesn't see him. He tries to follow her, then grimaces in agony, reeling and clutching his collar. As Lara continues down the street, Yuri brightens for a moment and chases her, holding up his good arm as if trying to stop her. Suddenly, he doubles over in a seizure. Yuri collapses. Several pedestrians rush to his side. Lara never turns around. Now at a funeral.
I was astonished at the extent of his reputation. His work was unobtainable at the time. It was disapproved of by the party. But if people love poetry, they love poets. And nobody loves poetry like a Russian.
A throng of mourners files past Yuri's grave, which is decorated with yellow daffodils. Lara approaches Yevgraf Shevago from behind.
Excuse me, comrade. Are you Yevgraf? My name is Lara.
I knew her name from the Lara poems which I'd found among my brother's manuscripts.
I knew your brother. I need your help.
She'd come to Moscow to look for her child. I helped her as far as I could.
At an orphanage, Lara studies the children's faces, then shakes her head.
But I knew it was hopeless.
Yevgraf offers Lara his arm. She takes it with a sad smile.
I think I was a little in love with her.
Later, Yevgraf watches Lara cross the street below his window. She turns to wave, her blonde hair bright against the drab gray cement.
One day she went away and didn't come back. She died or vanished somewhere. In one of the labor camps. A nameless number on a list that was afterwards mislaid. That was quite common in those days.
Now Lara gazes out from a picture in the book. Tonya stares at her, tears coursing down her cheeks.
Tonya, how did you come to be lost?
We were running in a street.
We?
My father.
Not your father, Komarovsky.
I don't know. The street was on fire. There were explosions and the houses were falling down. He let go of my hand. He let go of my hand. And I was lost.
Father has done that?
Oh, yes. People will do anything.
Komarovsky.
Yevgraf opens the book to Yuri's picture.
This man was your father. Why won't you believe it? Don't you want to believe it?
Not if it isn't true.
That's inherited.
Comrade General, when I was a child, I wanted parents. You can imagine how I wanted parents. I wanted to die when I was a child. You know? Now, I don't know. I can't be of any use to them now, can I?
I was hoping I might be of some use to you. Will you think about it?
Yes.
Tonya opens the door for a dark-haired young man who shoots Yevgraf a suspicious stare.
It's all right, David.
Yevgraf approaches him.
You work here?
Yes, Comrade General. I'm an operator.
And what do you operate?
That.
Tonya points proudly at the enormous dam. Yevgraf nods with an approving smile. He waves at the young couple with a casual salute, then walks them out the door.
Promise to think about it.
She nods and smiles, then picks up her bag. As she and David walk away, Tonya slings a balalaika over her shoulder. Yevgraf sees it and rushes to a railing.
Tonya! Can you play the balalaika?
Can she play? She's an artist!
An artist? Who taught you?
No one taught her.
Then it's a gift.
Yevgraf watches them walk away with a wistful smile. As a rainbow arches over the dam, a title appears: Dr. Zhivago. Water crashes through the dam in towering columns, creating frothy white vapors that resemble snow. Credits roll. Omar Sharif as Yuri, Julie Christie as Lara, Geraldine Chaplin as Tonya, Rod Steiger as Komarovsky, Alec Guinness as Yevgraf, Tom Courtney as Pasha, Shaban McKenna as Anna, Ralph Richardson as Alexander, Rita Tushingham as the girl, Jeffrey Rockland as Sasha, Tarek Sharif as Yuri at 8 years old, Klaus Kinski as Kostoyed, Jeffrey Keane as medical professor, Lucy Westmore as Katya. From the novel by Boris Leonidovich Pasternak, Dr. Zhivago, published by Feltrinelli Editore of Milan. We wish to express our sincere appreciation to the following: Ibirduero S.A. Aldea de Vila Dam, Spanish Railways National System, Finnish State Railways, Canadian Pacific Railway Company, CEA Studios, Madrid. Presented by Turner Entertainment Company.